is Jack Kimball. Represents Sawtelle Wang.
I was making a sandwich.
No, you just sell drugs to children.
Welcome to The Good, The Bad, and The Sequel. This is the movie podcast where we're talking sequels and we do it in two parts. The first, an interview with an actor or someone involved that made the film worth watching. And the second, a discussion of the sequel, what they got right, what they got wrong, and how it could have been better. I really hope you enjoyed last week's interview with actor Tim Russ. Of course, we talked about his role as Jesse the Pusher, who works for multiple gangs in this in Death Wish 4, which is the sequel that you're going to be discussing. But we talked about, of course, Star Trek, his start in Hollywood. And man, it's just such a cool guy talking about his transition to being behind the camera and directing. Great chat. If you didn't check that out, check it out later, because you have to be ready for this week's review of Death Wish 4. But before we talk about this classic Bronson movie, I got to introduce you to my partner in the sequel watching journey, Jamie Riccardi. Jamie, how you doing, man?
Doug, I'm doing fantastic. Awesome movie to watch. You know, I'm very new to the Death Wish franchise. I love 3. This one, to me, I don't really consider it a Death Wish.
No?
I just considered it like an awesome 80s action movie.
I agree with that.
It kind of went away from the Death Wish like formula.
Well, the third one went away from it like crazy when you really think about it. But this one, it's just insane.
The third one did go away from it, but it still had elements of Death Wish, where this one is like the Fast and the Furious Part 5, you know, where it totally goes off the rails. That's the best way I could put it. But it's awesome.
I would say it's like, before we introduce this week's guest, I would say it's like 2 and 3 had sex, had a baby, because in this one, he has those elements of 2 where he goes to like Sword in Disguise, pretends to be other people, and then the parts of 3 that are just batshit.
Well, if that's batshit, this is like, I mean, we'll get into it. I mean, I do have a lot of questions. Good. But yeah, we need an expert for this one. Without
our action movie sequel expert, he has his first sequel he did with us was Death Wish 3. Then he was Best of the Best 2, and then Under Siege 2. Man, this guy, he has covered all Bronson, Eric Roberts, Seagal, Bronson again, and that is, of course, our action movie sequel expert, Andrew Powers. Andrew, how you doing, man?
Doing great, Doug and Jamie. Glad to be here. Glad to be back with another Bronson flick, especially with the Death Wish series. I mean, it's probably the best series out there, besides Friday the 30th.
Is this your first time seeing this one, or you've seen it before?
No, I have never seen this one. I actually didn't know there was a 4 until I Googled 3. And now I'm really surprised that there's a 5.
I heard there's a 5 also. Now, Bronson was, I think, 67 in this one.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, this was 1987.
So how old is he in 5?
5? It took it like 6 years. So, yeah, he's old.
Because listen, I love Bronson, but he looked old in this one. And you know, the one thing I did notice is that he doesn't do a lot of running like he's done in other ones. He tends to shoot a lot of people in the legs, so he has enough time to get there.
Smart. When you're that old, and you gotta think from this one to 3 is only 2 years. He looks so much younger. 2 years goes a long way.
Yeah. Yeah, without a doubt.
Yeah. So, and then I have some behind the scenes things and future things it might have been. I got some good research, but let's just dive right in. These movies are great. Obviously, Canon Films did it. Oh. This movie was supposed to have a monster budget. Charlie did not like the third one. I guess he didn't like the storyline of that one. So he was like so pissed about it. So what he did was he wanted a lot of money. And they cut this budget so bad. There was a movie called Pirates that came out in 86. It bombed Canon. After they just made a ton of money off of Chuck Norris's Invasion USA, this budget, $5 million, Chuck got, I think, almost 4 million. So I don't know how they did it.
Wait. Makes sense. Wait. So the budget's 5 million for this movie.
Yeah.
And he made 4 million of that.
Yeah. That's why I don't believe it, because there's no way they could have done a million for everything. I'll talk about some corners that I found out that they cut in this movie, but really, even $1 million, you couldn't get some of these people for
that has to be off. I mean, I believe he got 4 million, but there has to be, the budget has to be a little higher than that. I mean, especially like the special effects of, you know, the balcony scene, you know, when the guy falls off the building. I mean, that was very high tech. So, I mean, I can imagine how high the budget is.
Oh my God. So again, Cannon movie starts because Cannon had that connection with MGM, who used to distribute and put out a lot of the movies. And we get the MGM lion followed by the Cannon.
You know, I haven't seen that in a long time. Like, you know, I missed that beginning. But I'll tell you, there's one thing this Cannon movie does not have. I mean, it has Cannon written all over it. I mean, the way the movie is, I mean, but this is an 80s movie and it didn't follow the rules.
I know. I know that it was the only Death Wish that did not have any boobs.
Oh, really? I was going to say, but most Cannon movies also have boobs, like in the 80s. Yeah. So like is there a story for that? Is there a reason? Because they had, I mean, there's plenty of opportunities they could have.
No, there were plenty. No, I don't understand. Yeah, there was a lot. There was a party that had a lot of girls. They could have done something like
there was boobs on the cake. Does that count?
But it was covered. No, but the candles are there. It was covered, so that didn't count. Mm.
So then we get the movie, man, starts off right away. We get Death Wish 4, Crackdown, and then the music in this movie is recycled music from other Cannon movies because they needed to save money. So like Bronson's 10 to Midnight, I think Invasion USA, a couple of those movies. But this movie had such Shaft vibes. The music was like very jazzy and.
Yep. Well, was this late 80s? 87. Okay. All right. So, all right. That makes sense. The one thing the beginning of the movie, which kind of just seemed like it took a long time, was the extremely slow pullback of the garage. Because you see a garage scene. I'm like, all right, you know, it's zooming out extremely slow. At first, I didn't think it was moving, but it was moving the entire time. And it was just a long shot. It was a very long shot.
And you get the girl on the heels walking and walking and walking and walking, still walking.
And there's no other car in this garage.
Exactly. Now, it's the now morning. Knowing the sun is out.
And knowing the history of the Death Wish series, immediately when I saw the women, I'm like, she's getting raped, right? Just it's just like a given. I'm
it's
like,
the formula.
It happens
it's
in one,
formula.
It happens in two, it happens in three. I'm just waiting for it. Like any minute now, all right, here it comes.
Wait, so I didn't see two. So there's a rape in all three?
All three?
Yeah.
All three. Two was the daughter again, right? The daughter got raped.
Two was the daughter, yeah.
Yeah.
Again? Did she get raped in the first one?
The wife gets raped in the first one. Okay. The daughter gets...
I don't remember if she was raped.
She gets beat up too. But no, and then the second one, the daughter gets raped. And then the daughter actually kills herself by jumping out of the window. At the
Spoiler alert.
Oh, to avoid rape. She jumped out of the window, right?
Yeah.
Wait.
No, that's Death Wish 3. No, Death Wish 3, she jumps out of the window.
Yes. Okay.
No. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of recycling. So there's obviously a lot of rape, and then there's a lot of like tossed, like falling out of a high story building.
There is.
All right. So I'm assuming the script, like this, so the story's part of the script, is not very long for all the Death Wishes because they're pretty much the same movie.
Yeah. No, they are sort of the same formula. So I have a story about like the formula of these movies and how they actually came to this story in Death Wish 4 versus the other ones. But the fact that this girl gets to her car and she gets in her BMW and it doesn't start, the fact that they show that it's a BMW, is that kind of like shitty for the manufacturer that the car won't start? And because of their faulty engine, the lady's about to get raped by these magical goons. Well, she's looking at a light, one light, and there's one, Why does she have to look down to turn the key?
Again, this parking lot is empty. It's empty. So the, she would, you would think she would hear people walking, you know? I mean, like you said, there's one, she looks down, there's two, and she looks down a third time, and there's three. She didn't hear one of them. And it, like they did, like, it, did they plan it that way?
Yeah, they were like, hey, let's, they were like, let's try something new. Let's be like a circus act. Or some or America's Got Talent. I mean, let's make ourselves appear. Because
it seemed very organized. It was very organized. It was. And then they disappear. Now, she was far away from them. The car was far away from them. How'd they get that close to her without her seeing or hearing anything?
Magic. Same magic the way they appeared. And the fact that she's just like, let me try this car one more time. Has that really, like, I've had crappy cars when I was younger. If I turn it like seven times, I don't know if the eighth time's going to do anything. I'd be out running.
Well, yeah. I mean, considering that she just saw these, she's the only one in the garage. She saw these three guys there. At that point, you got to get out of there. You got to run.
Yeah.
Well, she was in high heels, though.
Take them off. Run. And I think
she was surrounded, too, right? So she looked forward. There was a guy. She looked in the rear view. There was a guy.
No. No, they were all together.
I could have sworn there was someone in
the
back.
No, they made it seem like that. No, I know what you mean. She does look in the rear view. I think they check behind her, and there's nothing. And then she looks forward. So there's one time she looks down to start. Guy appears. Then the other time she looks in the rear view. But
So let me ask you this. So they organized that pop-up thing. But what if she never looked down? Would it be only one guy the whole time? Because like the other guys are waiting, like, come on, we can't come out until she looks back up.
Frank, she's not looking down. Come on, make it.
What do we do?
She's like, whoa. Hey, you can't appear yet. So then obviously the Andrew mentioned it, these movies, rape scene, no matter what, they always screw every time there's a rape scene in the movie, like, just screws me up. And the guy's like beating her, punch her in the face, and I'm like, holy shit. And then the fact that the one thing I must say about this Death Wish versus all the other ones, he does have lines in the other ones, don't get me wrong, he has a few one-liners, but this is, I don't want to put it on the same wavelength, but commando-esque. He has lines in this movie that make you just like say, like, what the fuck?
That's why I said it's almost like its own movie. Like, you take it out of the franchise, this could have been a typical 80s action movie, one-liners and just ridiculous action. You know, the one thing we forgot to mention about these guys, by the way, is the ridiculous pantyhose that they were wearing on their face, how tight it was.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and I know that's like, we see that a lot in movies. Was that really how it was in real life back then? Like, did like bad guys wear pantyhose on their face? Because it's not really hiding anything.
No, it's not.
Like, what is the pantyhose hiding?
That's why I think Doug's right with the cutting of the budget thing, you know, because it's the most ill-fitting pantyhose too, right? Yeah. Like, when you do the close-up on the guys,
his nose is all squished.
It's like, I don't, like, they couldn't string for a large? Like,
no, but... Okay, but even if they got a large, I mean, they're wearing the pantyhose. I mean, again, this is a trope you see in like a lot of movies, you know, of like guys that are like robbing a store, and you know they're trying to disguise their face, but pantyhose is see through. So what is like? What's the, I don't understand like the concept. I can understand if they were maybe wearing tights on their face, you know, like, you know, dark colored tights. All right, maybe it's gonna hide a little bit more, but pantyhose is see through.
Yeah, it makes no sense. Maybe they were expecting ski mask, and then, you know, Cannon came to the director and like, it's not in the budget. So they're like, Francine, Susie, take off your pantyhose.
Oh,
you can have them back in 5 minutes.
And now it's all stretched out. And
So then the guy looks up and because he feels like somebody, they feel somebody walk in, and Kersey somehow shows up, doesn't make any sounds, and we'll know why in a second. We'll reveal that. But the fact that the guy goes,
"Who the fuck are you?"
Death.
Boom, boom. And it, It's like, whoa.
The first line he says is death. One word. That's all he needed to say.
William Sadler must have watched that and went, man, that MF is spitting. Look at that.
I love that he kills them all. Like Jamie said, he maims one just so it could start. And I do love that. Like, obviously, it kind of gets ruined in a second. But the fact that the guy's about to escape and he closes the gate, you're like, wow, this is morbid. And he shoots the guy again. And then when he kicks the guy over and it's himself.
Yeah. What was the point of that? Like, was there, like, I don't understand that. So he sees himself as a bad guy?
Well, he sees a vigilante. He's taking.
Yeah, but those guys aren't vigilantes. They're rapists.
No, they are. But what he's doing, he's being the judge, jury, and the executioner. So maybe he does feel guilty about it. And see, let me.
Listen, if that's what guilt looks like, because all he does is basically kill, maim, and murder tons of people. I don't think he feels guilty at all.
That's what I was thinking about that too. When I saw that, I'm like, is he going to have like an internal conflict in this movie? Like, has he become the monster, like the thing that he's been fighting against? And I'm like, oh, this is going to be like a really interesting take on it. And they never revisit it again.
No, he does more murder in this movie than any of the other three movies.
I don't know. Death Wish 3, we'd have to look at the body count. I have the body count for this movie. We'll get into it later, but.
Well, he organized more murder. So, you know, you add his individual murder with how he organized the other murders. You know, it's a lot.
It's a lot of murder. Number, but I think in Death Wish 3, I don't know, man. He was mowing people down like McLean in the last Die Hard movie. But here's the cool thing. So the guy who wrote the script, he wrote three different scripts for this movie. And again, he didn't like his lines in the third one. And he really wasn't happy with his lines in this movie. The guy, Gail Morgan Hickman, said every day Bronson would say, this sucks. I don't like this line. So what they were going to do was going to have Jerry Nichols, who was like his love interest in the second one, which was his wife, Jill Ireland. She was battling breast cancer. So they were going to try to like almost not like forget the third one, but just go set 2 to 4, like continue that story. And then they were going to, you ready for this one? Talking about Fast Five. So they were going to have Kersey go after an international terrorist, but that was rejected because there was an upcoming canon film called Wanted Dead or Alive. That was that same movie. And then the final script, this one is basically the guy took the premise of Yojimbo and A Fistful of Dollars and wrote it into like present in 80s terms. So we almost got him chasing an international terrorist.
You know, yeah.
No, a guy that in the first movie had nickels in a friggin' sock, and that was his exhilaration. And then he goes to where he is now.
Well, that was part of my questions that I was going to lead into later on, because I don't remember the early ones, but he's just a regular guy, correct? Like, he doesn't have a background in...
Well, he's military, but he was a pacifist. He says in the first movie.
Okay, so he is... So the fact that he doesn't miss a shot, that's part of his military, or just the fact that he's just really lucky? He
practices a lot, I guess.
Because he really does not miss at all. At all.
No, okay. You're right.
All right. Yeah, okay. And, you know, not for nothing, the guy's making $4 million on a small budget. He should just be happy. Because in 1987, I'm assuming he didn't make too many movies after this. Like, he was probably towards the end of his career.
You'd be surprised if you look at his IMDb. He was one of the main canon guys. It was him and Chuck Norris that were basically carrying the torch. And then, obviously, it transitioned to other people before the company folded. But this is, like, right at the where they started going downhill. Like, around this time is when they were kind of, like, bleeding out money. So then we get Dana Barron, the original Audrey from National Lampoon's Vacation. And now Paul in this movie, how many years removed from all the murder he did in New York City? He is a hotshot. It seems like he's been there for a few, like, well, they say 2 years later in the movie, not in linkage to like him coming out to LA. We don't know where he's living before he visited his buddy in 3, but he's a big deal. He has his own architecture firm, Paul Kersey.
Is that what he was in the first movie though?
He's always been an architect. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. All right. I just think he's kind of selfish though, because he has a history of anyone that gets near him not really, you know, making it. So, I mean, he should be like Superman. Like, you know, Superman knows that, listen, every time, you know, Lois Lane's always in trouble because, you know, they're going to go after me. Everyone that goes near him dies. All three movies.
This one, somebody lasted a very long time. I was blown away.
And it wasn't a lot of remorse.
I'm blown away. Yeah. Come on.
Was that an accident?
Too soon.
That was an accident. Yeah. So then we get the fact that his lines, I don't know what lines he had written in. Did he improvise these lines? But the fact that Erica, she is a high school kid taking, you know, interest in her mom's new boyfriend's business, and she shows him these plans. Oh. She's really proud of, and he goes, not great, but pretty damn good.
Why would he say that? That's like, it's, you know, he seems extremely grumpy, and he shows no emotion in this movie. Like, he's almost like Clint Eastwood in Gran Torino. He's just like an old grumpy man.
66. He's AARP. He is grumpy.
He is grumpy. This girl's like excited to show him something, and he's like, yeah, not great. Imagine that. Like, oh, and so he's dating her mother, right?
Yeah.
Okay. What's the age difference?
Oh, dude. He must be hung like a mule, because in every movie, Deborah Raffin is hot.
Correct.
Every movie, he pulls these girls that are, I don't know. I don't know about Kay Lenz. I think Deborah was probably younger than Kay. I don't know. Maybe they're the same age, but he could be their dads.
I would say this one has to be almost half his age.
Wow.
You don't think so?
I don't know. It seems
close. I mean, yeah. All right. We're just curious.
And then we at the arcade, we see last week's guest, Tim Russ. It's one of his earlier roles as Jesse the Pusher. And how creepy is that older guy? I think his name is Jojo the drug dealer. He like he's got to be like what, 30? He pulls a 16-year-old aside, be like, yo, I got this special stuff for you. Go tell your boyfriend, you know? I'm like, what?
Was that the same arcade in Karate Kid?
Oh, I don't know.
Yeah, that, I mean, you know, the fact that they, like, you have all these young kids, and obviously you see later on how many young kids die. It was kind of creepy how like they're just, it's almost like they're attracting these young kids to the arcade just to sell them, or, you know, drugs to, you know, yeah, it was weird.
It's a good trap, right? You go to an arcade, that's where they're going to be at,
I guess.
But wouldn't somebody that works there be like, hey, there's some really old guys like walking around here.
Maybe the old guy works there. Maybe he also works there.
Ooh,
he could be the owner. He set it up. He sets up shop, and, you know, he's running his business in the back.
Well, I mean, we do learn later in the movie that these drug cartels are, you know, they're deep. They're deeply involved in pretty much, I mean, they've got the cops. They're operating of an arcade is probably small potatoes for them.
Oh, yeah, it's probably very easy to get them, you know, an arcade owner onto your side.
Yeah. Here's $10. Okay, great. I'm taking money this week. Not taking quarters out of a machine. So then we cut to Paul and Karen. They're getting ready to go to the movie, and she wants to talk about a commitment because they've been together 2 years, and he totally brushes it off, and he goes, come on, we're going to miss the beginning of the movie.
Well, I think he thinks that if he gets any closer, something's going to happen. So he's trying to hold off.
It's not like anybody's ever coming after him. And that's the thing that's weird. Like Superman, you mentioned, it's like people want to kill Superman. Right. They want to take over. He's just a friggin' architect that just happens to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, you know?
Well, is he in the wrong place at the wrong time? Because, you know, he gets hired as if he's like a professional,
Yeah.
I mean,
he puts himself in the wrong place. Yeah. He definitely does.
So then they get the phone call. They call about Erica overdosing. Man, and this next scene's really rough. And I don't know if you guys noticed, but the doctor kind of looked like a dollar store Howie Mandel. The guy looked like Howie Mandel, peak 80s stand-up. And I love how it's like she overdosed, but she's, I think, I don't know if he said stable, but in a second, it goes from 0 to 60. They're like, doctor, we have a code. He goes into the room. She's dead in seconds.
He had, first of all, he had no bedside manner at all. Like the way he like was telling the mom, he's like, you know, like it was just thrown in her face. And then they made her watch what was going on, which was tough.
Yeah.
Like you're watching. Yeah, I know. I know. Like you think there would be a, they would close a curtain or something like that, you know, like while they're trying to, you know, bring her back. No, let her watch her die right in front of her. And I wouldn't go to that hospital.
I would never go to that. No, I'd write a really bad, I'd give it 1 star in Yelp. They made me watch my daughter die. And he had bad bedside manner. He said, oh, she's going to be fine. And then
and he looked like an 80s comedian. I don't even think he worked there.
Then he put a rubber glove on his head and passed out. So then we, like right away, you guys know our action, our Bronson expert, you know something's going to happen right away. But isn't it funny? Like people are watching this, will see the backgrounds, but if you're not, Andrew has behind him, it says drugs are bad, okay, with Charles Bronson's face on Mr. Mackey. And that's like the thing about this movie. Right away, he talks about Erica's boyfriend, which I forgot his name, but did he do drugs? And he just like right away, he's like, I'm going to tail this guy. That's all he's thinking about this whole time.
Where would he find him? He wasn't at the hospital.
Oh, no. Well, this is the next day. This is after the funeral.
Okay. Okay. Even so, how would he know where this kid is to tail him?
It's Charles Bronson. He goes to the high school and he says he uses the same fake name way too many times.
And he's he's able to get really undercover anywhere.
He's pretty good.
No, he is. But again, you know, like they barely know this kid because he even says to the mom, like, do you trust this kid or something? Like she likes, like, so they don't know him. So I doubt he would know where this kid is to tell him.
And Chuck's there. He follows him back to the arcade. He's waiting behind him. He goes, the boyfriend goes up to JoJo, starts arguing with him. And he goes, I'm going to go to the cops, man. I'm going to go right to the freaking cops. And then boom, sticks him right in the chest. He's dead. And then Chuck comes out of nowhere and just, dude, that whole thing's amazing. And the fact that, again, he's 66. And again, isn't that even weirder? You have the, obviously Tim Russ's character and JoJo, who are in their clearly, I don't know, mid-20s, late-20s, at an arcade with like teenagers. But you have a man that's 66 just walking around. I don't think he's waiting in line for Dance Dance Revolution.
Walking around with a gun. And he's walking around with a gun, right? He walks around with a gun throughout this whole movie and no one notices or says a thing. And some of the guns are pretty big.
the end scene of the movie. Yeah, it's unbelievable.
But no one says anything.
Walk right past him. They're like, oh, it's probably one of the arcade game guns. Probably fixing it. But when he shoots him, when the guy, I don't know, where was that guy going? Whenever you see movies when guys
went to the roof,
he was climbing a roof, right? Wasn't he?
He was already on the roof, and then he was on the edge. Was he ready to jump? Because then he got shot and took a swan dive right onto the bumper cars.
Oh yeah, you know what? You're right.
It happens in movies all the time. Why do guys go to the edge? If I'm going to get shot, I'm not going to stand by the edge, because if I get shot, I'm going to fall off the edge.
That was a really cool death, though. That was probably, I'm going to say that was probably the top two deaths.
Ooh, do you think he died from the gun or being electrocuted from the bumper cars?
Oh, we'd have to wait for the autopsy. But I mean, I don't know. It looked like that electricity, because he was still moving when he was on top. Like, I think he might have survived if that wasn't, you know, pulsing.
Now, but did they shut the ride down or were they still going at that time? Because it looked like they were still, you know, driving around.
It was almost like a Jim Ross moment. Oh God, stop the damn match! You know, it almost seemed like that. Like the game or the operator was just screaming to get you, turn it off.
Yeah. And the detectives, I gotta say, the part I really love about this movie is you don't like the two detectives? You don't like Rainier and Nozaki?
Not at all. They're so, he's so like not what his partner should be. Like, he seemed like he had no clue what he was doing.
Rainier or Nozaki?
Well, first of all, both of them, I think. But I think they look like they couldn't be more of an odd couple partner duo. They didn't gel. Like it was just they didn't seem like real cops. I don't know. I mean, he gets knocked out one punch later on, you know, so, you know, they don't seem like, I don't know. I didn't like them. You like them. Of course you like them.
That's a Bronson punch, man. That's a Paul Kersey punch.
What'd you like about them?
I like their banter. I think it's always cool in these movies when, like the first one, like every one of these movies, somebody is always close to figuring out who it is. Like in the first one, it's that guy who's been in a million things from like the 60s and 70s, the heavy set detective. But no, again, there's a lot of great twists in this movie.
Okay, but wait. So you said that, you know, you always have someone that's you know, close to solving something. Now, this is the fourth movie. So I'm assuming Paul Kersey's name and face has been out there in the news at some point in the last 10 years, considering he's
no.
never been caught.
The cops always knew it was him. Didn't they know?
They let him slide. They throw it out. Ed Lauder in the last one. Ed Lauder were gunning people down like with that awesome music playing, and they were just shooting everybody. Alex Winter.
So you're telling me he's never been in the news ever in three movies?
Maybe for being the best architect of Orange County.
I mean, if you add up the people he killed in the first three movies, he's a mass murderer. He is. He's beyond vigilante at this point.
He tops Jason Voorhees. I know they always say Jason Voorhees has the most, which I don't know if that's 100% accurate, but man, these death wish out of these five movies, he kills a lot of people.
He does. And you know what? Listen, he kills a lot of people that may not be as bad as the main villains. You know, they might be like this little side gang member or something like that. You know, like maybe the most they ever did was steal, you know, gum out of a convenience store. Kills him. Like he really, I really like, I'm starting to think now the more we talk about it, he's a pretty bad guy.
And he believes everything. So this is when he gets home. He's, I guess, maybe excited after, you know, murdering this guy, and he gets an envelope at the door. He barely has a chance to open it, which we know how they figure it out. But how he knows that he opened it, he gets a phone call and he goes, I know who you are. There's a limo outside. Come, what would you do? I don't know if I would believe somebody like that.
Well, he said he had some proof that who he is, what he did
in the envelope. Oh no. Did the envelope have any proof?
No. He said on the phone, he gave him a hint on the phone or something. I know where you were last night or something like that.
Oh yeah. That's what it was. Yeah.
So he gave him a little hint. He goes, now do you believe me or something like that? So he gave him enough clues to say, listen, I know what you did. Get in the car.
And this is John P. Ryan. Pretty awesome actor. Another canon guy. Worked in a ton of stuff. He was in Avenging Force. He was the warden of the prison in Eric Roberts, John Voight, Runaway Train. So, dude, this guy's been in so much.
Yes. However, I feel like his accent was going in and out throughout this movie.
Mr. Kiss.
Spent a small fortune buying information on the major drug dealers in Los Angeles.
That's all he kept saying. Kissy.
He looked like Kirk Douglas.
Oh, he does have that vibe, yeah.
He does. And then at one point when he was really mad, he reminded me of Will Forte.
Oh, dude.
At the end of the movie.
All right. Wait. That is, we'll get to that. But dude, that is something. But the fact that he's going to be getting him because both they have a connection, you know, Paul's, you know, surrogate, you know, girlfriend's daughter ODs, Nathan White's son OD'd or his daughter OD'd too.
His daughter.
Yeah. So they had a,
but see, this is where I have a big problem. So this guy is hiring him to go after these drug cartels. And he's obviously, you know, he's got money because he lives in a mansion. You know, but that's the best he can come up with was a vigilante. Like he couldn't, like, you know, like, I mean, of all people, why Paul Kersey?
I don't know. Liam Neeson was booked. I don't know. I guess because he has that connection and maybe he feels like emotionally he'll do it without asking any questions. Because all he really says is, give me a few days.
So maybe I missed it. How does he know that Kersey was the vigilante?
maybe with his connections and all of his money, maybe he
so they never explained that.
No. That's one hole in this plot.
Okay. One hole. Okay.
Well, I mean, you know what? We don't know who Jesse was actually working for, right? Like, that's never really, like, we assume he's with, you know, JoJo, but we never know who his.
Well, no, you know, they were working.
Is he working for the Romeros? Is he working for?
They were working for, what's the other guy's name? Not the Romeros. He was working for
Ed.
The Italian guy,
Zacharias.
But was he?
I don't think it mattered which one, because the plan was to, you know, have them go against each other anyway.
Yeah. No, I know that. But no, I thought
Jesse could have been the informant, right? Like Jesse could, like when he saw Kersey, because he had to see Kersey, like he could have told what's his name?
Oh yeah, that's true.
So you're trying to find a connection that way.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm gonna be going down a rabbit hole.
Oh wait, that's the guy that when they interviewed him, the guy the blonde hair guy, he's the one that saw everything. So maybe one of their drug dealers, or he obviously looked like he used drugs.
Yeah,
we didn't get there yet. All right.
So then this is where the first time I'm like, man, this is an anti-drug PSA, because Karen's like crying and Paul says, it's not your fault, it's the drug dealers. So like, there's so much that goes back to that, like that whole time. And then,
so Doug, yeah. So this is 1987, right? So I was really like interested, like what's the focus on the cocaine and the drugs here? So 1986, this was the Reagan. This was when Reagan really started his war on drugs. So like 1986, they passed the Anti-Drug Abuse Act. They put $1.7 billion towards the war on drugs. They started all like the mandatory minimum sentences. So I mean, part of that probably funded this film, you know, right? Like,
so clearly you're not only our action expert, you're our drug expert.
I you know what? I had to Google, because I'm not from the streets. I had to Google the difference between crack cocaine and you know, regular cocaine. So I when the doctor said she overdosed from smoking cocaine, I was like, is that possible? Then I was like, oh, okay. I Googled it and it's like, all right, it's possible. Like, now I know the ins and outs.
You did your research.
I did, yes.
Okay.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's amazing. And the fact that you said $1.7 million.
$1.7 billion.
Okay, good. Because when I thought you said million, I'm like, you're telling me that they put less than half of what freaking Bronson made on this movie. Oh god, that's amazing. So then Karen she works for like the LA Tribune. It's not like the real name of the LA paper,
right?
And she wants to do an article on drug dealers, and I love that.
Which I don't think they would ever allow. She's that close to the case, they would never allow that.
And it, again, this was in another movie, I forgot, but it was like an Austin Powers with Will Ferrell. She asked him three times and he finally gave in.
Yeah, there wasn't a lot of twisting. There wasn't arm twisting at all.
And then the fact that the next thing that she does is she has to go to a morgue, and we see just a bunch of dead kids, and the detail that the guy goes into. I don't know. I'm not a morgue worker. Usually, this is the nicest morgue worker in movie history.
I don't think they would allow just anyone, you know, to go down there and look at all these dead bodies. First of all. You know, I don't think they would allow that, you know, and wouldn't you think some of it is part of evidence, you know, how they died, or, you know, like, I don't know if they did any autopsies or anything, but I don't think they just allow anyone into morgues.
No. And usually morgue employees they're not dressed up like that. They're usually really creepy. Yeah. And
oh, it was a very clean morgue. The floors look very clean. It was a very clean morgue.
And just the fact that he knew everything about each one. And I'm not saying they wouldn't know that. I would think they just know the body. But he knew the backstory on each one, like a little blurb, like it was like, I don't know, The Bachelor. And it's like, here, let me tell you a little something about him. Because the one, he goes, she's 14 years old. She was a prostitute and a regular customer slit her throat. And I'm like, oh, my God.
He knows a lot of detail. Like, you would think, like, I agree. Yeah. And how did he know which bodies were under which sheet? Because there were no labels or anything.
He lifts him up. He's like, this is Frank. No, not Frank. That's- Shit. That intern didn't put the toe tags on.
That's why I think part of that 1.7 billion really went to this movie, because like that was just like going body to body. It's like, yeah, this is why you shouldn't do drugs. This is why you shouldn't do drugs. This is like it. None of it mattered in the rest of the movie after that scene. It was just like, this is almost like a PSA.
Well, it's definitely the start of like a whole different movie now, you know. But you missed one thing, and we talked about Bronson's, you know, not showing emotion and how he's so grumpy. So you missed the funeral of the daughter, right? We didn't talk about that. Okay, so not much really happened, but what he said to her, so she started like getting upset again about, I can't believe this happened, you know, my daughter and all that. And he said, now this is the day of the funeral. He says, you have to stop this now. He says that to her. Like, I mean, the day of the funeral, like, you know, like, all right, she's dead, move on. And clearly, we know later on he's able to move on from death real quick.
Oh my God, yes,
he walks right past it. He walks right past it.
Oh my God.
This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the we just hit a million orders stage. No matter what stage you're in, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/special offer, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/special offer.
So then Karen, right after the scene, she meets up with Jesse. She gets some information. And did you think that was in the movie that Tim Russ almost got hit by that car? Because that was really close. He like jumped up in the air and skirted it. It wasn't like the usual, like, I'm going to plant my feet, the car's going to stop here. He like jumped over a little bit and continued it.
So you think that's like just a random car that is driving through?
It could be. It could be like the one in, God, what's the Dog Day Afternoon? Is that it?
Oh, no. I know you're talking about. No. It's Urban Cowboy, or it's with John Voight, the one with Dustin Hoffman and John Voight.
Midnight Cowboy.
Yeah, yeah, the cab hits him, and he says, "I'm walking here," and that was all ad-libbed. Yeah, it's amazing.
But no, it almost looked like he was about to get whacked by the car. But and then he had a great line. He had some good one-liners in this scene, even when he was like smoothly trying to sell her the drugs before he found out that she wanted information and she worked for the newspaper. And he yells at the car, "Brakes on the left." Love that.
Well, maybe it's a new driver.
Yeah, maybe it was a student driver on the top of it, and he was like, "Oh, it's fine. Brakes on the left."
They are going to the arcade. You know, a bunch of
kids. Yeah, there. Jamie mentioned this a few seconds ago. This is like a different movie from here, because this is when Paul goes back to meet with Nathan White, and he says yes. And
hold on. Where did they meet? In the movie theater, right?
This isn't the movie theater one, right?
Oh, that's okay. Later. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I had a question about that one. Okay. All right.
And I have an answer. I'm going to tell you, I have an answer for that one. And I think I know what your question is going to be. But yeah, so then he gives him a folder with all this info. And then we have the whole story about Zacharias. And I love that Paul says, "I want to handle it my way, but I need weapons." And he goes, "Here, call this guy." Who the frig's that guy? And we didn't even see, maybe they cut that scene out, but the fact that he gives him a guy's number, who's that guy that he, I don't understand that whole.
Well, he is, I mean, spoiler alert, what he does for a living. So I'm assuming.
Don't spoil
it. I'm not. I'm just saying. So based on what he does for a living, I'm sure he has a guy.
I know. I get that. But at this point, I'm just like, man, this rich guy knows a lot of people, a lot of seedy people. The fact that he's able definitely to do that.
Yeah.
Well, and then he asked him the James Bond-esque weapons and stuff, right? Like, he's not giving him his normal, you know, rifle and stuff. He's getting some cool shit.
See, I thought he made some of that himself. I was like, where did he get that bottle from? Like, I mean, like, it's so ridiculous. Like, you know, like, but I guess the guy has all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Some of it is high tech.
Yeah. And you know what's really funny too? I just thought about this, was the fact that this is where Nozaki, and this is where I was talking about the 2 years before the time frame. So this was where Nozaki mentions the same bullet that they pulled out of JoJo was the same one from a vigilante kill from like a few years back.
Yeah, but is that possible? Because he just got new guns from the guy.
Ooh. No, the first kill.
No, the first kill was Paul's gun.
Yeah.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Oh, you're talking about. Okay, I got you.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. See, this is why you're the action expert.
He is our action expert.
But that means, so that means he's held on to that gun for three movies, right? Because he isn't killed in LA since the first one, right?
I guess storyline wise, because if this is 87, 85 is when he's only visiting his buddy in New York. So okay. It's 2 years. So I don't know. He's been dating Karen for 2 years.
True.
But just the fact that, yeah, so it's the same bullet from 2 years ago. So they're trying to figure it out. Oh, and that's where the punk was, right? He said, I saw the plate. It was a correct. Tornado. So
and he only had the last three digits or something like that of the plate.
That was him. Okay. I was trying to figure out where he was from, but you're right. So then I love that the cops right away, there's only 9 blue Toronados in LA. And the first one they choose is Paul Kersey. And I love that the balls that Paul Kersey has are massive because he doesn't make eye contact with the cops until the end of the scene.
Wait, this is where were they meeting? Where
the
did they
cops
see him?
Went into his
at
office.
His job.
Oh, it's right. Okay, you're right. And he starts doing work like right in front of them. Right? Doesn't he?
It's like the most suspicious. Oh, 100%. Like it's like plain to see that he's avoiding them the whole time.
But he's very calm. Mm. You know, he looks so suspicious by not even like looking at them, but he's very calm in what he's doing.
He's always calm and cool. And then even the fact that this dick cop, when Rainier goes, he asks about where it was the night of that murder. He's like, I was home. I was by myself. And he's like, oh, what the hell did he say? How did he even get to the wife and kid? Oh, he asked about if he had a wife and kid, right?
Yeah.
He died. And he goes, in a car accident? Why would he assume it's a car accident?
Not even being remorseful about it either. Just like, oh, so he wants details.
And that was it. And then once he said no, he like what left? Maybe he was thinking about Deborah Raffin from the last one because she died in a car accident. She got pushed down a hill. She had knocked out, pushed down a hill, and the car exploded like it had like jet fuel in it.
I don't remember. Was he a little remorseful in that one?
For like 5 seconds, right? Five. Yeah, it wasn't very long.
Oh, and then he got pretty angry. And then that was where it turned. That's where he got where all the weapons and everything.
Okay. All right.
That was the only one he cared about.
I just think later on, he's like, I just can't deal with this anymore. You know, he's just so used to it. He's just like numb to it at this point.
Yeah. So then we get Zacharias. Zacharias's party at his house. Wait,
is Zacharias Italian? I mean, they're playing him like he's the Italian kind of cartel or something.
I thought that was Greek.
Right? I mean, you thought he was Greek? I mean, it sounds Greek, but he looks kind of Italian. He acted kind of Italian.
Maybe he's half and half.
Zacharias really isn't an Italian name, I guess. All right.
So it was Perry Lopez was the actor, and he's Puerto Rican. I totally got the Italian vibe from him. That's where they really built it up to be like mafioso.
100%.
And his gang was just full of like, oh my God, we'll get to it. One of the guys.
Well, there's only, apparently there's only about 6 members of each gang.
I know. Well, until later, then we see the other underlings that we've, there's a lot more than that.
There wasn't that many. There's only 3 cars full.
3 like limos full. They were all limos.
Yeah, but when they were standing out there, there's only maybe 10, maybe.
Yeah. But I'm saying, but during these scenes, we only like actually like see a few,
like 3 or 4.
Yeah,
right.
And the cake was, we talked about it before, the cake that was a naked woman, and he wowed the crowd. You can tell when the guy who's like a boss at a company, or like the boss of a gang in this case, is so, his employees are so scared of him. The fact that they were so excited that he put a freaking candle flame out in his mouth. Like he cured cancer. They're like, yeah.
It wouldn't matter what he did. They're going to cheer no matter what.
And guess who's at this party?
Paul. Okay. Okay. So clearly this is a big cartel, or so, you know, they have tons of money. You know, they would have, they would have bodyguards everywhere. They would have, they would probably, if they're having a party, I would assume they would meet every single person that's working there, that's going to be working the party. And somehow he slips right through and gets a job at the party.
They had to delete the scene where when he went to the employment agency
during the interview process.
It took 3 weeks. He had to go for three different interviews, pass a drug test, the physical. But just the fact that this guy that nobody knows, because usually those people, it's usually like a group that works these parties.
Of course.
The fact that he's just like, I'm going to go get ice.
So basically, any like, in that case, and being a cartel, you're always scared that someone's going to be there trying to get you. Yeah. Anyone could get there walking with a gun and no one would know because they don't check anybody.
Exactly.
Okay.
Well, do you think they checked him? Because later he didn't have anything on him. Maybe he just
You don't know where he was hiding it.
That's true. So then we get the Romero gang shows up to show like some sort of peace. Did you notice someone in the gang?
I didn't. Did not.
Is that John Favreau? Is that
John Favreau?
That's what the big mountain guy looked like. John
Favreau. He kind of did look like him a little bit. No, but a guy who's been a frequent for us. He was in, well, just one movie, but Tom Everett. He plays the creepy.
Oh yes, yes,
yeah,
yes. I didn't realize. Yeah, yes, I recognized him. He's in tons of movies.
He's in a ton of movies, but I'm saying that we covered. It's funny that. He's kind of typecast around this time of his career. We'll talk about how type later. But so Paul gets in there, and as soon as he gets into the room, he does the wiretap, and the gang show up into the room. So his first thing was, let me go in the bathroom.
Wait, so I never wiretapped anything, but who taught him how to do that? I mean, like, I don't know if you went to someone's house, like, do you just stick it in there? Do you have to like touch wires to it? Like, I don't know how that works. He seems to know exactly what to do, and he does it very quick. And I mean, phones back then, I don't remember them really unscrewing that like that. Like, you know, I mean, I just, where did he learn that?
I don't know, but he does it multiple times really quick. He's just
multiple,
like,
super quick. Yeah.
And it seemed like he just dropped some kind of thing in there. Unless it just records from there. If it's just really just a recorder that records. But how could you hear both sides of the conversation from down there?
Correct.
Because the receiver's on top. Now, I don't know.
I would think there's something more involved than just putting like a sticker in there and then, you know, closing it back up.
Yeah. If anybody's listening, ever wiretapped a phone, of course, you probably have to be over 50 years old. Easy. At Seagulls only on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram.
Okay, so
let us know.
He's clearly good with weapons somehow and wiretapping, but when he's not a good eavesdropper. I have to be honest.
He's terrible.
Because the door is like almost all the way open while in the same room where he is. He literally has the door wide open with his face sticking out. He does it later in the movie too.
He's not a good peeper.
He's not a good peeper.
He should have dropped trout and just like sat on the toilet. That would have been like the most convincing, you know, alibi ever when they open the door and he's just like, you know, I mean, they would have just been like, all right, let's let him finish up.
You know? You sound like a professional peeper. Because that sounds like it would work. Yeah. Even if you're outside, if you're peeping at someone's window, just drop. Sorry, I'm just going to the bathroom.
You want some toilet paper or newspaper?
I was going to call the cops on you, but clearly you're going to the bathroom. That's right.
I love the Vincent guy that shows up. So they're having like this little talk between the, you know, the two gangs, and this Vincent guy, who I guess you can guess he's not going to hang around long. The fact that he's like, Vincent, like talking almost like he's like a little kid. And he's like, Vincent, how is Brazil? He's like, oh, Brazil, the girl's tits are up the ear.
He's that guy that you see like in, that is just annoying to like the head cartel or head family. Like he's just like, you know, he's going to spill his guts somewhere. He's going to do something that is going to go, you know, just annoying. And that, yeah, you knew right away, this is not going to last long.
Andrew, did you catch that one? He just said, spill his guts.
Oh, that's too soon. So this is the weird thing about these villains, right? Like they're not particularly villainous, except for when he offs Vincent. But even then, like I'm really questioning it. Like, so that's his employee. He's been skimming off the top. You know, maybe he's docked his pay already. Maybe this is his third strike, and he's like, all right, I just got to, you know, get him off the payroll. So, you know, I didn't even think that was that bad. But that was really the only bad guy thing he's done in the whole movie.
To be the head cartels, I mean, there's two major cartels. They do seem a little wimpy.
Yeah.
I agree with you.
I mean, they're employing a bunch of people. We learned about that in the fish market later. I mean, they're clearly establishing a very strong economy in L.A. You know, they're hiring these daily workers. So I don't know. You know, they may not be bad, such bad guys.
They're like an employment agent.
Kersey's the monster. Kersey's the monster in this one.
Oh, he's definitely the monster in this movie.
He's definitely raised the unemployment rate in L.A.
think about it. They had peace. These two cartels had peace. They were friends. You know, everybody was getting along. Everybody was making money. And Kersey destroyed all that.
It is true. That is 100%.
Drugs are bad. Drugs are bad.
And the fact that as soon as the guy gets stuck with the ice pick in the chest, and then he falls to the ground, and then Kersey slams the door. For a guy that has killed over 100 people easy in this franchise, the fact that he gets like, oh, shit, blood, and slams the door loud, and then they're like, who the fuck's in there?
Wait, you thought he was grossed out?
Why did he slam the door?
Why was it open in the first place? You're going to tell me?
I know, that's what I mean. So if it's open, why close it now?
Yeah. He should have had like a cup against the door and just listen.
That would have been very exciting. Just he's on this side, just listening the whole time. What are you doing here? I love this scene. He's like,
what are you doing here?
I was just using the toilet.
Step out here. What's your name?
My name is Leo.
Leo. Leo.
Well, I mean, not for nothing, though. It's kind of a dumb question for him to ask him because he's in the bathroom. What else are you going to be doing in there?
Eavesdropping.
Oh, okay.
Poorly. But I love that to try to get – that's what I understand. If their whole thing was this guy saw what happened, we're going to murder him. Just murder him then. When there's
I said the
guys,
same thing.
Why would they go, Leo, you seem like a very smart man. If you get a lot of money in it for you, wouldn't at this point be like, well, how much money?
They just killed Vincent. So why waste time with him? Like Vincent is a somebody. Kersey's a nobody. Why did they have to drag that? First of all, they do that throughout the whole movie. I mean, there's plenty of times they could have killed him, but they give him enough time to do Kersey things.
They're probably like Leo, this old guy. He's a bartender. He's old. That's what he should have done, right? Open the door and they're like, what are you doing here? He's like, honey, where are you? And he just pretended he had dementia.
Or just stand over the toilet and say, listen, it takes a little while for me to get started.
But so then they go, hey, help him carry this body to the car. There's money in for you. Dude, this scene, this guy was, why'd they send that guy out? He seemed like the out of shape henchman.
He, not only did he seem out of shape, but he also gave away what he was going to do by looking at the head of the family and give him like the nod. So if he didn't do that, Kersey wouldn't have known what was going on.
And he wouldn't have easily just, he didn't kill him.
Yeah, he did. He slammed his head in
the car door.
He had the crowbar.
Yeah.
He had the crowbar and the hood of the car.
The crowbar
that weighed probably like an ounce. It was probably made out of plastic the way he easily reached it. Why would that guy let him reach into the trunk? They're dropping a body in.
How long did that guy take to get his gun ready to kill him? I mean, literally, this is in their eyes, he's a bartender or a waiter. Really? Like you need to do this whole elaborate thing to kill him?
Well, this is bad guy 101. Just kill the frigging guy when you have the chance. Let him carry the body or maybe why does he have to carry the body? Just tell him to, hey, can you do me a favor, buddy? Okay, at least get rid of this ice pick. Walk to the garbage can. While he's walking to the garbage can, shoot him in the back of the head.
And what makes it worse is the fact that he just killed Vincent right in front of everybody. So why would that make a big deal? Why couldn't he just kill Kersey right there? Like that makes everything. Yeah.
How about the way he runs away?
He runs away. That was running?
I know, but he was like really low. So now it is. You guys ready? This is it. Oh. Best scene in the movie.
I can't stop looking at that picture.
All right. So we get a scene where they do another voiceover. They say, the Ramirez, number one and number two hitmen. They always go to this Italian restaurant on Sunset. So he's sitting in the car, and he's flipping a switch on the bottle of a bottle of wine and putting a label on it. He couldn't do, was he in that much of a rush? He couldn't have done this not outside of the place where he's going to commit this crime.
What couldn't have been done? Whoever gave him the bottle couldn't have already have it in there. Like, why does he have to put it together?
Maybe.
Yeah,
Nathan.
I didn't understand the label. Why did he have to label his own wine? Like, why wasn't that part of the original assembly?
And is that something that really happens? Like while dinner's going on, like, They go to a bartender who doesn't own the restaurant, so it would have nothing to do about a wine cellar coming in there.
Now, maybe he had alternative labels. Maybe if he was going to like a Puerto Rican bar, he might have had like a rum label. You know what I mean? Like there might have been alternative labels for different situations.
Yeah, but he already knew that he's going to an Italian restaurant.
We always prepared. The guy who gave, maybe he just picked it up 5 minutes before. Nathan White's guy was getting an argument with his wife, so he had to drop off the thing. He's like, did you put the label on? He's like, that's what you do. You didn't pay me to put the label on. But no, Jamie, to answer your question, they do that. I know it sounds really hokey, okay, but some bars, for some reason, they do that. They'll have like a beer cellar, like with a craft beer, like some, I don't know why they do it. Because even this guy, when he drinks the wine, while he walks in, he goes, name's Jack Kimball. And he goes, I got this wine from Napa Valley. You ever been up to Napa Valley? And he's like, yeah, no, which again, it's not that far. And he's like, beautiful place. And the guy takes a sip and he doesn't like it. He really doesn't like this wine.
Well, I mean, considering who knows what kind of wine it was, but the fact that he's going into a restaurant where there's only three people in the entire restaurant. What kind of selling is he going to do anyway?
That is a really great point. There's really
there's one table being used and the bartender who doesn't own the place.
And I love that we see Danny. Young Danny.
Oh man.
With clearly a wig, right? He's wearing a wig, right? His hair was too perfect.
I got to tell you, I thought he looked good. I mean,
he looked great, and his lines were great. This is probably the most lines he had up to this point.
Oh, yeah. But I'm just saying, like, he looked good because, you know, he got a little weathered later on in life. You know, so I think he looked pretty good here. You know, I wonder if this was before his extracurricular activities.
What do you mean extracurricular activities? Like going to prison and stuff?
He was in prison for a while.
Oh, that was way before this.
I was.
Oh, that was like when he was like 16 until 28, and then he got like fully sober.
Oh, okay. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
All right. I take it back.
You take it back. But this scene is just the fact that, again, I mentioned before, the fact that the bartender was clearly not liking it. And he goes, well, what about your customers? Wouldn't they go? I know he kind of says they don't want to be bothered, but like the.
He didn't put much of an effort. I would say that if this was like for real, that bartender would be probably dead. If he allowed them to go disturb their table.
Exactly.
Like, you know, I'm sure they got strict instructions. We don't want to be bothered at all while we're sitting down here. And it doesn't take much for Kirstie to say, okay, I'm going to go bring it over there.
Oh my God, this whole freaking scene. The fact that Danny Trejo, which they didn't even mention anything about it, he swears he knows Jack Kimball.
Yep. Yep.
From Boise. Are you from Boise?
Oh, San Francisco. Remember? He said, he was like, I've seen you. He said, definitely said San Francisco.
One of the guys said San Francisco. No, there's no
backstory.
Oh, maybe.
And that's what made me question it. I'm like, wait. Was Danny Trejo like in the background of like Death Wish 3? Like where like
one of the gang members, right?
Like, yeah, I was trying to like really like dig into it. Like, damn, where the fuck did we see Trejo before?
No. Maybe he's also an architect.
Imagine that.
Because why else would he know him? Like, why? If you tell me the cops and news don't know who Kirstie is, I doubt Danny Trejo knows him.
Yeah, and just this whole scene, this has got to be.
Oh, here we go.
So the fact that in this part, he keeps saying like, oh, you know what?
Gentlemen, it's your lucky day today. Bottle of wine on the house.
Hey, not bad.
Hey, don't I know you from someplace?
I don't think so.
Yeah. I know your face. Did you ever live in San Francisco?
I'm from Idaho.
Hey, I got a brother in Idaho. What city?
Boise.
And his out is to throw the water, water in front of, and boom.
I did not notice that the first time I saw this. So I'm so glad you showed us again. That is amazing. That is the most unbelievable thing I think I've ever seen in a movie. For those of you listening, it might be the worst dummies I've seen taking the place of Danny Trejo and the other guy. I clearly like wax. I mean, they didn't try to hide it.
Can I tell you something? It's almost like a kid that did a project.
Oh,
he took time on the guy on the right. I'm not saying the guy on the right's great, but it's so much better than on
the- not even the same hairstyle as Danny Trejo. It's like, I mean, really, yeah, it looks like he just put it together real quick, stuck a mustache on and threw like whatever wig he had.
And he looks like deflated. Cause he's like kind of sunken in. He looks so much shorter than the other guy. And the other guy's like, they wrapped a beer in his hand.
So you know what? He does look deflated. Like he looks like, you know, they probably said, we got to hurry up and finish the scene because he's losing air.
Oh my gosh.
Now, did you notice that the first time you saw it or?
So I've seen the memes of this for a while now, but oh my God.
I didn't notice it at all. It was too quick. So you know, Andrew, did you notice it?
No. I like to live in a moment, and I like to believe it that it's real, and Danny A. Trejo is actually dead.
That was the worst dummies I've ever seen in a movie. That was unbelievable.
And Jamie, watch. I showed her that scene, my wife, and she said, it doesn't even look like the explosion happens in that room. And at first it doesn't because it's so large. Then at the end of the scene, they show like a few things on fire at the table and the dummies. But it is like such a huge explosion. Now, again, Paul is sort of the villain in this movie. That bartender's murdered, right?
I wrote that down. I said, so he's an innocent guy who he just murdered the bartender also. Because no one survived that.
No, there's no
way. Wasn't there a third person at that table?
There was.
There was a third person, yeah.
Did he? Because the third person, when you watch the beginning of that clip, looks like the guy that's with the guy that looks like Seth Rogen or whatever. The like he looked like that guy was there. So I wonder if he escaped. Because I wonder if he was in that scene.
I don't think so, because then he would know that it's Paul Kirstie and they'd have like
that's true. Okay. So yes, so Paul just murdered an innocent person.
He just murdered another
person. A family man. He was probably had a family and everything.
And then the next one we get. So now, again, this whole time we get Nathan White, like a bunch of these scenes in a row, just to cut to the next place that he's at. And he's like explaining Max Green, which is Tom Everett, who again, Creeper in Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3, Creeper in this. And I wrote, you know, we need a Creeper. Call Tom. Because I swear, if we look at his IMDb, there's probably other movies around this time. But in this one, it just seems like it's a movie store.
Yeah, video store. Yep.
But it's a bunch of creepy things about girls. And Paul just fitting to this, the whole point of this movie, anti-drug. He takes the drugs, and he throws it at him.
Now, and also, I mean, I think, and I've seen a lot of movies with drugs and everything else. A lot of times the people that are packing it and all that, they're innocent people. They just like, you know, they're like, they're not killers. They don't, you know, like he basically murdered more people here that might be innocent.
They had guns ready to go.
Well, I'm sure when you're in the drug industry, there's always guns laying around like fire extinguishers. You know, you never know when you need one.
I just love Paul when he throws it. He goes, "How many kids have you killed?" And then Uzi's him
with a silent. Was there a silencer on there?
I don't think so, because then the guys wouldn't have heard it in another room, right?
Well,
he did screw a silencer on. He did.
I didn't know there's you could put and a silencer on an Uzi. Silencer. I didn't know you could put a silencer on an Uzi.
I guess so.
I mean, Paul Kersey can, but I didn't know if you really, you know.
And did you notice any of the posters behind it? It was like Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2 and Runaway Train were like behind the guy, which are like the canon movies.
Oh, but
I love right after that, the other guys right away are already down the hallway and Paul mows them down like they're nothing and just leaves.
How did he know like they're all part of it? Like this is a video store, right? You're going to tell me no one was renting a movie this time? I mean, you have to assume there had to be some customers in there.
No. And would it be really funny if he walked into the store, he leaves because he carries the gun around everywhere. He just walks past and he's like, he walks past somebody looking at a movie and he comes back and he goes, "Rent this one." And he hands them like Death Wish or another one like 10 to Midnight. That'd been really funny.
No. And how about the worker that worked, the guy that worked or the woman that works behind the desk at the movie store? So he killed at this point about five innocent people. Let's just say five.
Did he kill her?
He was mowing everybody down. You can't control that. He's the villain in this movie, without a doubt.
So then the next scene, another cutaway, boom, that scene's over. Let's go to the next one. And we get, can we call him not Jim Brown?
I like this guy, though.
I do, too.
He seemed like a badass. Yes, he looked like Jim Brown, and he seemed like a badass. I feel like they didn't do him justice.
He should have been the big bad.
I agree.
He really seemed like he was the big bad.
And I think he didn't get justice. I think they could have done, you know, maybe a little cursy, like a bigger, a better fight, a better ending. The guy's a big guy.
They said he was the top gun. Didn't they say like he was the top gun in the gang?
I think he was the enforcer of the gang. And how about, again, Nathan does his little like three or four sentences about him. Did you notice the last one that he's an opera singer?
Yeah, he's a baritone or something.
Is that why they're going? Oh, so they're going to an opera, I think.
Yeah.
Now, see, okay. So I thought that woman that he was with was like a hooker or something, but clearly that's his girlfriend, I think.
What a miserable relationship.
Because he treats her like, they treat each other like trash.
Yeah.
I mean, there wasn't one nice thing they said to each other the entire time. It was insult after insult.
Yeah.
I do think Kersey has the best line here.
Oh, the best line.
The best line here.
So her biggest gripe so Kersey watches them leave. He sneaks into the apartment. And when they left, they shut all the lights off. Kersey turns them on. He goes in. So the girl, as soon as they get into the... First of all, he says, "You eat like a whore." And I'm like,
"Oh, he said horse."
I thought he's
like a horse.
Oh, yeah, he's horse, a whore because
how does a whore eat?
Exactly. I was like, aren't prostitutes usually skinny?
No, you No. You eat like a horse.
Okay, good. So good. That clears that up. But her biggest gripe of the opera, which she already knows she's going to this. She gets in the back of this really nice limo, probably going to have a nice night out. She's like, why can't they just sing in English? That's her whole gripe of the whole thing. And then she goes, you got the tickets, right? Oh, forgot the tickets.
Well, he also told her after he said, you eat it like a horse, he told her to lose weight. Wait, you also forgot this line because she goes, how do I look? And he goes, you look like shit.
God, yes. He's not a good guy.
But that's their relationship. Like, no. There wasn't one nice thing said. In fact, she said, I wish he was dead. drop dead.
Wish he would drop dead.
Another one right on cue. What do you think their wedding vows were? You piece of shit, I love you.
Well, what do you think their wedding song was? It was probably, what's that Guns N' Roses song? 6 Feet Under? Lover, but I had a killer.
So then the cops are there. Rainier and Nozaki are there, and they see, they're like, hey, why is he going back into the house? Like, people forget shit. They forget keys. They forget things. In this case, tickets. So
were they assuming that Kirstie's going to be there or the vigilantes or whatever? Like, why did they go there?
I think they sort of cleared him at that point.
No, they wanted to stake him out because I think they were trying to identify targets, and they were like, this guy's a top gun, okay. So like, let's stake him out.
So basically, Kirstie, again, who's a regular Joe, is taking out the top people of these cartels.
Yes.
Well, he's a mercenary now. He's a gun for hire.
He can't be as good. I mean, if these are your top guys and they're being taken out in 2 seconds, what kind of? I think you're right. You know what? We'll go back to what you said before. These cartels are like, they're not that villainous.
No, and I think you're right that he's definitely a mass murderer because he's checking all the boxes. He, you know, lost his family. He spends all his time alone. You know, like he checks every single box. No remorse. No emotion. No.
Yeah, he doesn't give two shits about anything. Even in the scene. He's a smart guy. Again, he's, you know, wiretapping, screwing everything on. And Frank comes home. He opens the door and he knows somebody's there because the lights are on. And dude, the friggin' line.
All right, before you get to the line. So we already talked about he's not a good peeper. Clearly, he has a whole apartment he can hide in because he heard it. And he still couldn't hide. Like, there were plenty of spots he can hide. And he was like, I think he saw him in the image of the refrigerator or something like that. Like, he was, it's almost like he hides, but you can see his shoes sticking out.
What the fuck are you doing here?
I was making a sandwich.
I was making a sandwich.
I don't think he's good under pressure. Like, he can have so many better one-liners, you know, like, you know, or... I mean, just or reality have like, better lines if this was like real. He just buckles under pressure and he says whatever is the first thing on his mind.
Exactly. But they're classic. This and in Death Wish 3, when Deborah Raffin's like, come over for chicken. And he goes, chicken? I like chicken. But this one that he says I was making a sandwich is amazing. And this is the rare in all of his movies, like all the Death Wish. He rarely does the hand-to-hand combat. It's like very rare. And it didn't go as long as I wanted to, but it was great to see him get his ass kicked for a little bit because you didn't know how he's going
to. It was, but they waited for him to be 67 to do hand-to-hand combat. I mean, he made 3 other movies before this. He couldn't do it early in his career.
Yeah.
Yeah, he got tossed around a lot in this scene. Not one cut on him.
No, he doesn't. He's like Seagal. He doesn't get cut. And then the fact that he shoves him through the TV, and I know obviously TV technology has changed, but just the amount of shit inside when he throws him into that.
Okay, not only that, now TVs back then were made so solid, like they're heavy, they're thick. There's no way his head is going through that. That tube. There's no way, you know. And sure enough, he clearly went through there like he was going through like a kitchen window.
And then Kersey tosses him off the balcony. He swan dives. Well, a dummy swan dives.
Oh, I would say more like glides down. The dummy kind of got, it wasn't much of a, you know what? I wonder if it was the Danny Trejo dummy.
It might have been. Paper mache. And then Andrew mentioned, you guys talked about the line that she goes, I wish you would drop dead. And then he lands on the hood of the car. And so this is where Nozaki, alone by himself, he sees Paul Kersey sneak out. And you're like, that's kind of weird. Wouldn't he alert Rainier like right away that he's going to follow him? Double checks. It's a blue Toronado.
He also never held a gun before.
Who, Nozaki?
Yes.
Why?
He looked awkward with it. It did. I don't think he played a good cop. Like, you know, and again, you know what? You don't know how long he's on the force for, because we know where he's really working. So maybe he's just like thrown in there undercover. He's really, you know.
What do you think? He showed up like Paul did for bartender. He just showed
up. If Paul could show up to a cartel's party unnoticed, you know, I'm sure, you know, what's his name? Tasaki?
Nozaki.
Nozaki. I'm sure he could show up in this, because the police here weren't that smart. I mean,
they were not.
Not for nothing. For none of these movies, they're smart.
No. And then, so before we talk about that scene, this is the one where this is when Paul meets Nathan at the movie theater. Now, what did you have to say about the movie
theater? Well, no, we're going to be talking about the same thing. I'm just saying, all right, you're meeting someone because you know, at this point, we don't know why they're meeting. I guess they need to meet away from like a neutral place.
Yeah.
So they meet at the most quiet place possible to talk. Like, you know, you're at a movie theater where everybody's silent and you're watching a movie, and that's where you want to conduct your business.
Exactly.
It's like going to the library and conducting a, you know, I just found that like a weird place. Like, they could have picked any place to go talk.
And this is where I was talking about the money, like how much money they were losing.
What movie was being shown? Do you know?
Was it Cello?
It's like Othello. I think it was like a double feature of Othello and Runaway Train.
Yeah.
What wouldn't have been funny Othello, if Death Wish was on there?
That would have been really funny. But here's what's even funnier. They were trying to save money so much. This was Cannon's personal viewing theater. So this wasn't even a real movie theater. It was just a small theater that they had at the...
Oh, that's why there was like only 8 seats. That was okay. That makes sense.
Or if it was a dirty movie theater, that would have been funny.
I thought it was Stan Lee when it. Well, I didn't realize that was still Nathan when he walked in, because that guy looked like he aged 100 years when he sat down. Yeah.
So then we find out Paul has to sneak into a fish plant to find out where the cocaine's being shipped. And this scene again, he shows up, he clocks in. Did he have an interview? Did he just show up? I don't know. But his first day. Right after he clocks in, he goes, I'm going to go wherever I want. And this Mr. Clean looking guy right away goes, hey, what are you doing? And he goes, what's your name? Name's Kimball. And then right away knees him in the balls. And he's fine. Like, is that guy dead?
And everybody was, he was watching everybody from above and they were all looking at him. Like he wasn't even trying to hide or anything, you know. Because he said this is very difficult. Didn't Kirk Douglas say that it's going to be very difficult for him to get into the next step or he said upper level?
Mm-hmm.
Did he say upper level?
Yeah. Oh, no. Yo, he said to get to level 2 is the hardest part.
So when I was watching this, I'm thinking like, but he's on level 2 because he's looking down to the floor. Yes. So I thought he was already up there. I'm like, wasn't that difficult?
Yeah. And then he actually goes back to level 1 because that's the ground floor that he gets.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. So he was already, how difficult was level 2?
I don't know. That was so stupid. And the fact that this is the dumb thing that too, because when we see him snooping, we see a guy in an office looking out a window, like to the warehouse, and he sees Paul like looking around like crates, and you're like, oh shit, he's gonna get caught, right? This guy follows out and can't find him somehow, but at the very same time, Paul walks up to a freaking guy and he goes, I was told to put this in there. And the guy goes, put what? And he knocks him out.
And yes, the guy saw him easily could have snuck on him and see what he's doing. And you don't see him until like the last, like he was, took him forever to get there.
It did.
And he had the high ground too. Like he's watching him from above. It's like you should be able to see every
and
movie.
He does what he did before. He's peeping and he does it with the door open again. like he clearly could have opened it very little and peeked in and could have seen what was going on. No, his whole face was sticking out of there.
And no, not even that. The fact that from the people that are taking the cocaine out of the tuna, they could see him. But the fact that his ass is sticking out, that the people behind him, he's just standing there. He is.
And
just
no one says anything.
And then he starts shooting all these guys. And I know you always mention this, but didn't it seem like a Bugs Bunny cartoon when he pulled out that ticking time bomb? That little like dynamite wrapped in the plastic yeah. with almost like a clock on it. As he throws that, blows up a ton of people. This scene alone, I have the body cam for the whole movie, which I'll talk about when we get closer to the big scene with a lot of death. But he kills a ton of people here.
Now, first of all, why did it have to be like a time bomb? I mean, like, couldn't have been a grenade. Would have done the same exactly. exact, like, you know, they have to do it. And again, I'm going to say, you know, these cartels, when they're delivering drugs and everything else, they're using regular workers there. They check them when they leave. And they, you know, like, so he's killing a bunch of innocent people. I guarantee you they're not being paid. You know, they're not part of the cartel that are checking drugs and, you know, checking the fish and all that stuff. So let's say he's killed now 10 innocent people.
Yeah. Like Andrew said, Zacharias is just trying to stimulate the economy and boom.
And think about all the fish he killed. That now they can't sell it and people can't eat.
I wonder how much they charge for cocaine fish. So you got a restaurant, is that something extra?
Do you think it's like funny mushrooms, the same thing? So it's like cocaine. So you can have cocaine in the fish and it's like the same kind of thing?
I don't know. Well, I've read on the internet cocaine and mushrooms have really different effects, but one makes you fast, one makes you slow. Okay. Paul Kersey, you probably know because this is a PSA.
I thought they were going to do something when he did blow up, like that whole big, you know, when they were unpacking the cocaine. I thought like the explosion was going to send like a cloud of like, you know, cocaine throughout the warehouse. And like, I really thought it was going to do something like that. And they didn't do that.
And the cocaine's all over Charles's face. And then he runs really fast. Like he doesn't need the truck.
All white now. And his mustache is all white. Like a milk mustache.
And
again, he walks away unscathed.
Yeah. But like, to your point, like these are regular workers. Or do they get bonuses if they stop guys that try to blow up the cartel? Because he's driving away in a pickup truck. They're chasing him with like broom handles.
Well, remember, so they yell, was it like $1,000 reward to kill him? And it's like $1,000.
See, that's what I mean. Like they wouldn't be part of the cartel. Like that's like the regular workers that are just trying to make money and leave. And yeah. So.
Yeah. Like $1,000 bonus. All right. That's going to buy my kids some clothes, you know, for school. And he's just mowing them down. Just, you know, poor little Pacolito over there that's trying to make a living. And, oh, terrible, terrible. Paul Kersey.
Now we cut to Zacharias getting ready to go on a helicopter. And we get our first M. Night Shyamalan twist of the movie. We see Nozaki show up and you're like, oh, shit, Nozaki's going to arrest him. Nope. He says exactly who it is. It's Paul Kersey. And then he goes, go take care of me. He goes, I don't do that. He's like, well, you do that now. Then you're like, oh, shit. But like, I think Jamie's right. Like maybe detectives don't shoot guns that much because they're just solving puzzles. And maybe they get to the point that they do have to use their gun, but he was not ready
this is the scene I meant about the gun. It just didn't look natural. Like, you know, I mean, again, I mean, he is an actor. So, I mean, you know, maybe he doesn't have a lot of action roles, but he just didn't look natural holding that gun.
But they set this up earlier after Jim Brown died, when the Putin cop asked Nozaki, he's like, did you see anybody suspicious? And he's like, no, I didn't see anybody. But he clearly saw Kersey, and he And you're like, oh, like, is he going to cover for him? Like, is he going to, you know, try to, like, you know, steer him away? And then you're like, oh, no, he's part
you
of
know
the
what? You're,
the,
you know, the you're right. We didn't talk about that. And I was thinking that he was a good guy. He was trying to help him out, like, or something. Like, yeah, I agree. That was the twist right there. That started the twist.
Yeah, that is true.
Yes.
But the fact that he shows up, you see Kersey's secretary leave, and it's pretty dark. It's late at night. So Paul, when he's not murdering and doing everything else, breaking into these fish, like, when does he have the time to do this? Does Karen know? Does he go home to Karen?
Well, that begs the question. What's the time period from the restaurant with, you know, Trejo to now? How many days or hours have gone by?
I don't know. That's a great question.
Because I feel like not a lot of time has gone by. Like, I think it's like, you know, pretty, you know, a day or all the same day. Like, it seems, you know, I don't know.
Because what happened was because we can't cover every part, but it would be like somebody dies and then we see like the Romero's like panicking or Zacharias panicking.
Right.
So it could be maybe every other day he's doing the murders. I have no idea. But the fact that his secretary leaves, Dozaki shows up and he goes, I know it's you. And he pulls the gun out to shoot him. And Paul, again, calm, cool, collective. He's just sitting there and then poof, gunshot. How does he hit him in the heart through his drawing desk?
He did not miss one shot the entire movie. Like, the entire every gunshot that he does nails exactly where he wanted to hit him. Whether it's in a kneecap, whether it's in a chest or in a head, he nails everybody the exact spot. He's the best shooter I've ever seen in a movie.
Maybe Cannon was like, we can't afford to have any missed bullets. No retakes.
That was a significant scene, though, like, because this is the first time he's killed a cop, right? Like, you know, all three movies previously, he's killed bad guys, and now he's killed a cop. All right, but he's dirty.
If he's dirty, but does he deserve to be murdered? You know, like, he's not selling drugs. He's working for the cartel, and you don't even know what extent. He might just be a dirty cop who's just, you know, doing a little spying business on the cartel. But Kersey killed him.
But why did he kill him? He didn't want to give up Nathan White. That was the whole thing. He said, "Who are you working for?" And he said, "I'm not working for anybody."
Right. Okay. So he killed 12 people now.
At least 12 people.
No, I'm talking about people that did not deserve to be murdered.
Oh, okay. The bartender is just minding his own business.
All the video store clerk.
Yes, the video store clerk.
Would the server who spilt the water? Do you think he died at that restaurant?
He's dead.
Would he have survived since he went to the back? I don't know. It would depend on the thickness of the walls, right?
I'm going to say everybody in that restaurant died.
Dude, Paul was pretty far away, it seemed, he was behind a brick wall, and he felt like he just got away. Like, that's the way he looked back at it.
He really did just get away. Like, you know, back to that, was there a timer on that thing? Like, it seemed like the minute he threw it, it was, like, going off. Like, he didn't give himself much time to get out of there.
It seemed like he knew he needed to get away, which was the reason for the water splash to distract him and run away. But I didn't see.
No, he wasn't. It wouldn't have been like easier, just like, you know what? I'm going to leave the bottle of wine here and then leave and then let it go off. Yeah. Like, you know.
Maybe they would have figured out.
I think they need a new guy.
Maybe they would take a sip and then be like, this sucks. Throw it out. And then the waiter would definitely been the only one. He's thrown into the dumpster, or he brings it home for him and his family. Then that could have been even worse. So maybe it worked out even better. So Paul takes Nozaki's body, leaves it next to the, like, a jogging trail. Rainier shows up and he's like, come on, I was trying to take a nap. And then you have like the guy, he seems like the mayor, but I think he's the chief of police. He talks about like, he almost talks like he's like running for mayor of the city, but then right away he goes, it's Kersey. He knew it was him. He said he had some information on him. It's gotta be him. Rainier's a wacko too, dude. The next scene's pretty crazy for a cop. That's illegal, right?
Well, I like he's, yeah. Would you call him before, Andrew?
Putin? He does have Putin vibes.
He does. That's funny.
Not clearly not as much as he should, but yeah, he's a little pussy. But
so the next scene is it. This is the scene. This is where the Romeros call. Zacharias calls the Romeros, and he goes, "I don't know who's doing it, but they're trying to set us up to go against each other. So let's meet. Where should we meet?" And he goes, "How about Vincenzo's?" And he's like, "Your restaurant? You think I'm going to meet at your restaurant?" He goes, "I don't know. How about the oil fields? That's your next option. Not like a mall or something."
But that just shows you again that Vincenzo's, second time Italian restaurant, they're totally making you think this is an Italian mob.
Well, I just made that up, but it sounded
no, legit. But it was an Italian restaurant.
Oh, okay.
Or Tony's, but they said another Italian restaurant. So, yeah. So you think they should have met at a mall? So, like, both cartels walk in with guns and meet at what, the food court?
The food court, exactly.
We're going to meet at Banana Republic and,
you own Banana Republic. We're meeting at the Rainforest Cafe. No, but just this whole thing, that the fact that they're meeting in the middle of nowhere, where these guys are supposed to be smart. We know they're not like the smartest gang. They're low, and then there's hills above them. So somebody who is taking out all their guys one by one can easily pick them off. And the way this starts, yeah.
Oh, before, wouldn't you think? I mean, obviously they don't trust each other. So wouldn't you think they would scope the area out?
Exactly.
You know, before, as they got there, they didn't scope at all. They didn't look above anywhere. First of all, they both arrived at the same time. Right. They both, the cars pulled in the exact same time with the exact number of cars. They both had three cars, limos, and they both had the exact same number of people that got out of the cars.
Maybe it's like two hand touch football. They have to line up the same amount of guys. You bring seven, I bring seven, only two Uzis. It was just such a joke. But
clearly, they brought their entire cartel there.
Yeah.
Because it wiped them away.
And just the way it started, the fact that they just met up, they started talking, Romero and Zacharias, and what started was a gunshot that was from a monster gun. The gun that Paul Kersey has in the scene, a gunshot that these guys aren't that dumb, right? That it didn't come from one of the bullets. Wouldn't they have seen a cross if somebody shot? And then from that, they just all
started. No, they assumed that someone was sniping from the other cartel.
The tensions were so high, you know, they're ready to go.
They just figured it was, you know, someone they planted. But again, why did they search the area? They totally think about Lethal Weapon when the helicopter was flying around, checking everywhere in the desert. You know, like that's what they would normally would do. Yeah. You know, no, they just arrive, you know, and assume everything's okay.
How'd you like the stunts in this scene?
I think these are two low level cartels. I think that comes to fruition in the end. But like we're led to believe like these are really big cartels in there. I don't think they really are. I think they're like third string.
Well, think about it this way. Cartels, I mean, when we find out there is a third one somewhere, you know, it's like a one man gang. I don't know who else is.
It's true.
It's him and Jesse. That's it.
Yeah. You know, it's really just that. It's L.A., New York, big gangs. Those guys know what to do. Chicago, the second city. L.A., it's the third city. The gangs aren't. They're just learning the whole deal. But the stunts in this scene.
Oh, every person was flying around for every shot. Like they went. They all got blown or went around. It was regular guns. I mean, they were being tossed around.
Two different guys put their heads through the car windows.
Like a torpedo. Like it's almost like he dove headfirst with his arms on his side into the window.
Yeah. Crazy.
So this is the point where I realized there was something up. Because if you looked at the timeline, you know, there's like 20 minutes left in the movie, right? And it's like, this is the shootout between the gangs. It's like, all right, there's something else going on. What's going to happen? And that's why I like this a lot more than, I don't want to say a lot more than the other ones, but like there's so many twists and turns. This is almost like a thinking man's death wish, right? The other ones, you know, three was a shoot 'em up. You know, the first two were like revenge movies. This one has so much twists and turns. Like they definitely evolved.
Well, they didn't have much of a budget for anything else. So, you know, writing a story doesn't take much of a budget. So that's probably where they put, you know, but what I like about the twist coming up is when the twist comes up, the way they did it, like you clearly can, like he can clearly put two and two together maybe now and say, all right, you know, I know what's going on, but no, they go to the house again to see that he's not there. Like that to me was a good part. I just don't know, knowing that he would, oh, we didn't even get to that part. He has to get it set up.
Oh, we're close. So. Well, all in this part, all it is Paul just shooting all these guys, the guys that are left in the oil fields. There's not that many left. You have the number two guy for the Romero gang, the brother. He gets shot while he's getting ready to shoot Zacharias because Paul, I guess, wants to kill him himself, it seemed, right?
Well, yeah, well, he does, but doesn't one of the car leave? One of the...
Yeah, Zacharias is number two because he's like, wait, and he peels around the corner.
And this is where he shoots him in the leg and slow walks with that massive gun towards him. You know, but yeah, he wants to, because he has the picture. He brought the picture of the daughter.
Yes. I don't know her.
I do.
God, I love that. God, I absolutely love that.
But it didn't feel satisfactory. Like that was almost, you know, foreshadowing the end of the movie. Like there was no satisfaction with that kill, right? Like, cause we've never seen Zacharias be like personally responsible for Erica's death, for any bad actions. I don't know. There was no.
So the fish market and the video store, which cartels are those?
Romero's was the video store.
Okay, so they both. I was gonna say they don't seem like cartels. Like Zacharias does not seem like a cartel. Hmm. You know, so I was wondering, like, you know, is he involved in drugs at all? You know, or is it just, you know, okay,
yeah,
all right.
No, and the fact that again, they obviously sold her the crack cocaine, so she died, but she did it herself. It's not like they made her do it or shot her up. You know what I mean? So it's kind of weird. Like Andrew said, it's like, is there satisfaction for Paul? I guess in a way, because all these other kids die by drugs that they're putting on.
Yeah, but streets. He doesn't know that. Only his girlfriend knows that. He doesn't know about the kids that were in the morgue.
Well, I'm sure they talk, right? Have they seen each other since?
They haven't seen each other since. Because every time he goes home.
Since the morgue? Nope. That is true. None. No action. No.
So this is where he says the job is done. And what's his name? Says, all right, let's meet.
Nathan, yeah. Well, first he says, I swear he said, let's meet at the golf course, the country club.
Country club.
That was not a country club.
Yeah.
It wasn't a country club.
Yeah, it was like the opposite of the oil field. It was the other side of it, a different angle we never saw. Because it was a next
That's
to
what it looked electric, like.
It was next to a razor wired fence.
Yes.
And the car was parked and he goes, can you get in? Oh, he's like, oh, I thought Nathan was gonna be there. I'm gonna bring it to him. And the fact that he gets in the car, the guy walks away, lights a cigarette, and a car comes to pick him up.
Okay. All right. So this scene. Okay. We touched some of this before about the fact that why do they have to go to this elaborate thing to blow up the car when they can easily just kill him? You know, because he wasn't expecting it at all.
Exactly.
You know, so if they shot him, he would not have known. But okay, so they want to do this elaborate thing where he blows. Maybe they don't want any evidence. You know, they don't want to deal with the body, but how long was he in there before that bomb was going off?
I know.
I mean, clear. Like he literally had enough time to kick his way out of there and escape.
Was it on a timer? Was that guy having a button that he could have pressed?
It made no I was gonna say it. Like, and why not have one with a button? I mean, he had a guy that could make a wine bomb. So why couldn't he make a bomb with a button?
Or just a rocket launcher or a grenade. Anything.
Well, Percy does have a grenade launcher at the end.
No, he does, but I'm saying, why didn't they use this now?
Yeah, right. Well, they use the same guy.
They do.
He has his card.
Same guy.
They do.
I love that he shoots out the back of it just in time and then climbs out.
Literally, it blows up the second he's like 2 feet away. I mean, like I said, he had to be in that car for a good 2 minutes at least.
It was way too long because he checked all the handles. After you checked the one, say,
he had enough time to really like make his escape plan. Like he had enough time to think. Like what kind of bomb is that?
No, I know, and I think we talked about this one time. They should do spoof movies about these because wouldn't it have been really funny? Like. Once you check, first of all, you don't even need, I don't think you need to check the door handles if your limo driver gets into a car and leaves, because you might maybe assume it. But what if he did leave the one door open? He just opens the door, walks out.
I think it would be good if, like, you know, like the limo driver pulls away, but is watching, and like cursor gets out and it doesn't go off. So the guy is like, "Whoa, what happened?" And he walks over, he lifts the doorknob, and goes up. See, that's a Bugs Bunny. That's a Coyote thing.
That's a Wile E. Coyote, yeah. So then Paul pissed off. He goes, "You know what? I'm going to go to Nathan White's house. I'm going to give him a piece of my mind."
Okay. So doesn't he think that just knocking on the front door, he's going to be like let in? Like this guy just tried to kill him. And he doesn't think like, you know, he might be in danger walking to the front door or something. No, just he knocks on the door.
No fear. And the fact that the butler at the door says, "How'd you get past the gate?" So was it like a lock gate or like an armed man at the gate? Like, what did he get past? And the fact that he barges into the room and it's a guy that's
older than Bronson.
Yeah. Older than, that'd been a good fight scene.
But I did like the fact that he's like, "That's my name," right? Then he goes like, you know, like, so like this is where to me, like they could have done it a cheesier way. And I thought this was pretty good. Like,
oh,
wow, this
I guy
didn't even come to the, like, where, like he was using his house. Like, you know, yeah.
That was a really good twist. That was probably the best twist in the movie.
And he even says, I wasn't here last week. I've been in Europe the last 3 months. So it was like that lined up perfect. And even Paul driving, how about this? Another bad henchman. Oh. If you have the chance to get rid of a guy, do it. Paul gets pulled over by two cops. They check him. They throw him in the back of the car. And I love that Paul goes, "Oh, well, if you're taking me to the police station, it's that way." And the guy's like, "Shut up." And you're like, wait, fake cops. They're ready for everything. How do they know he's still alive?
Great. Not only that, okay, he's in this car with handcuffs, and they have guns in a front seat. He had enough time to kick that grate or the whatever the gate that's blocking them before they were able to shoot the gun. They give him way too much time.
These are still real cops, I'm assuming. Now, they didn't read him his Miranda rights, which kind of tipped me off that they were kind of a little fugazi. But I think they're still real cops. So this is now three law enforcement officers that he's killed
them. And again, they're not good cops because it doesn't take long to take a gun out and shoot him. The minute they realize he's kicking, he should have been dead.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And somehow one of them does survive. One of the cops does survive. Cause in the next scene, this is where you see. So this is where,
oh, I thought they both died. I thought they both died in the crash.
No, because Nathan, not Nathan, who is, so he does have a name. So John P. Ryan's character changed. He's like, I don't know, what would you even call it? What he is now? A slime ball? The way he talks, the big gold chain. He's wearing a friggin' denim jacket.
He doesn't look like Will Forte in that picture behind me.
He does. He looks like MacGruber, sort of.
He does, 100%. Like old man MacGruber.
But he has a cigar in his mouth and just his anger towards these guys. So I guess somewhere in some iteration of one of the scripts, again, this is Wikipedia, they have next to his name is Ferrari. So I don't know if that was like a name they dubbed him as his like drug dealer name, but dude, it's the turn that he made for me and like this very elegant rich guy that talked very slow and Mr. Kissy to this friggin' slimy guy that seems like he's hanging at the track.
"Are you fucking deaf? I said everything's great. Except the whole operation sewed up in a few months. Most of Zacharias' street dealers are ready to work for us. Romero boys are breaking our balls, but don't worry, we'll push them in line."
It's amazing. It's really, I love it.
It
I
is.
Love every part.
No,
of it.
It is.
So now we're at, oh yeah, we got Jesse. So now all these guys that their bosses are dead. Again, does Ferrari John P. Ryan have anybody really work for him? Because his two employees are the number two from Zacharias, and Jesse right. was one of the pushers for Romero. Oh, was it? No, for Zacharias. So his two Zacharias' guys.
Yeah.
And Jesse calls Karen and says, hey, me, I have some information for you. And dude, this is this gets crazy.
So they must really not know who, like this whole movie, they're like, who's setting us up? Who's so this old white guy must really be an unknown third cartel, right? Like, as you would have thought, been like, oh, maybe it was old man Winter that's, you know, trying to turn us against each other. But like if he's such like the, you know, the big, you know, manipulator of all this, like he's totally unknown to them.
You're talking about the cops or
no, the old man Winter, the KFC guy. Yeah,
because they were only worried about the other two cartels. Why were they not worried about this guy?
I don't think he is in the game. I think he wants to get into it, and he is trying to get them to kill each other so he can.
So you think
in.
He's got?
Maybe he's from New York or Chicago, twist. And he's coming. To
so
move
you think
in.
He's a startup cartel?
That's an interesting twist.
He's a startup cartel. Got it. Okay.
Okay.
No, because to be honest, he doesn't have anybody work for him. So there's no way one guy can be running all this. So he's going to try to maybe just like swoop in when they're dead and just take over the operations. He took two employees.
But he has Jesse, though. That's the key. Like, he has like, how does Jesse know to come to him?
Yeah, but was Jesse wasn't number one, right? Is he number one to the old Kirk?
No,
right.
Jesse was like a pusher.
So maybe he's in on it with Kirk Douglas, and he was part of it. So now he's a number one guy now, with him, the other guy being the leader. Because why else would Jesse go with him?
See, I think we need a Death Wish 4A to further delve into these character stories. Like we can definitely deep fake Charles Bronson and redo, you know, do some deleted.
Or how about we just start our own
DWCU,
a Death Wish Cinematic Universe, wow. Like Marvel. Boom.
Oh, man.
So then we get. So this is where I was talking about before. Like, this is how crazy Rainier is, or Putin, as Andrew calls him. When Kirstie gets home, and he's like, Karen.
I'm sorry, Vladimir Putin.
This is the only time that I think he says, Karen, are you home? And he walks in, and Rainier's sitting there with the gun.
Yes.
And he's, like, shaking. He's so friggin' angry. And then Paul's trying to tell him everything that's going on and that Nozaki was dirty. And
he doesn't believe him.
Yeah, he doesn't believe him at all.
Right.
And then the phone call comes right now, right?
Yep. Yep.
Karen's already kidnapped.
Right. So this is where he finds out. And the cop now is hearing all this. And he still doesn't believe him. He's literally in the room listening to this conversation that his girlfriend is kidnapped.
And what does Paul do? He takes the phone. He does like a 1-2 combo. He takes the phone. Well, he kind of deserves it because the guy before that open hand smacks Paul Kirstie
in the
face.
He does. Oh, you know what? And he does, like, I don't think he gets a mark from it, but he keeps holding his face and like licking his lip. But there's no, I don't think there's any bruise there.
He may have dislodged
it. It shifted it to the side a little
bit.
But he has like this 1-2 combo. He hits him with the phone in the head and then punches him. He hits the couch. He's out, passed out on the ground.
So that's an assault of another law enforcement officer. So now we're up to number four.
Is he really punching that hard at 67 to knock him out? I mean,
I don't know. Ask James Brown, who's on top of a limo dead right now.
All right. Yeah, but he went, in his defense, he went through a TV.
A death is a death. It counts.
I'm not sure why he had to punch him either. Like, I have a feeling like if he like sat there and like reasoned with him, like he might have been able to like turn him.
He has time to like reason with this guy.
Heard about where Karen has been for the last 2 weeks. So
that is true.
I think she can hold on for another hour.
She could have been kidnapped like 2 weeks ago. He wouldn't even know. Yeah, like he didn't even like really like, I don't know. He didn't even seem like that worried. He was like, okay, you know,
Okay. I love right away. He goes to his fridge. Did you notice his fridges? He had two ginormous fridges next to each other, and he pulls the one back.
And the secret room there?
Dude, he's an architect, so it makes sense. I guess if he built that house.
Whose house is it? Is it his or Karen's? I was under the impression it was Karen's house.
Well, it's Karen's, and maybe he sent her and the daughter away on a trip for a couple weeks, and then he was able to build a secret room, a panic room where he has all his guns.
So that question, do you think Karen knows about his history? Like this is does Karen know that he's really Batman kind of thing? You know, like she doesn't know that, you know, his dark side, you know, like Bruce Wayne, Batman kind of thing.
I don't know. I mean, is the second fridge an indicator yeah. of a previous murder lifestyle? I don't know.
Maybe Karen likes to eat
like a horse. She yeah. eats like a horse too. not like a whore. So the next scene in the parking garage. So
I thought this was coming first full circle from the oh. when I saw the parking garage. I'm like, all right, it's coming full circle from the beginning.
Yeah.
What kind of business is this garage doing? Because there's never a car in there.
Well, this is the skating rink parking lot yeah. with like thousands of people on the skating rink, but nobody parked. Nobody parked.
Now, no cars. So the skating rink has multiple level cars, like a garage. That many people go there?
I mean, maybe they just skate in there. Maybe they don't drive.
They skate in there. It's teen night, so none of these kids drive. So there's going to be no cars.
Their parents already dropped them off, and they're good.
But, dude, this scene blew my mind. Not even – I don't even know if you're thinking about what I'm thinking, but the fact that they see Jesse in his car, and in the car is also Ferrari, John P. Ryan, and Karen's in the car too. Yes. The fact that Paul's in it, they flash the high beams, and the car starts moving, okay? And it turns. This car turns.
Yes.
And then they're like, get him! They block the car in. They shoot it up. Nobody's in it. How the hell did... Not the fact that he jumped out. That's ridiculous. But how'd the car turn?
First of all, it's that 80s... trope that how many times you see a movie where there's like bricks tied to the gas pedal, there's string on the steering wheel to like, you know, make it turn. Like, you know, this is Paul Kersey we're talking about.
I would have liked them to show that. I really would have liked them to like pan into the
well, then it would give it away. Like, you know, we're supposed to think that he's really in there, you know, because not for nothing, they unloaded on this car. You know, if he was in there, they shot about 500 bullets to kill him because they literally unloaded on this car.
They could have ran out. They could have wasted all their bullets and then they wouldn't have been ready.
They wasted tons of bullets. Like it was like a minute of them, just three guys shooting at this car with one guy they're thinking it's in there.
If they had Paul on their side, he would have used one bullet, just one bullet. He would have took him out.
So old man Winter, he's armed Kersey to the teeth this point, right? Like he's made his you know, armory guy available to him. He's armed Kersey with every single weapon that he needs. And then he's going to go try to kill. It just seems so.
Yeah. He gave Kersey the guy's card, all the weapons he needs. And then he's going to...
Exactly.
He also, in his defense, he thought he killed him already. So, like, I guess he didn't expect him to go...
Twice. He thought he could... Yeah. He should have killed him twice.
Yeah. Well, he had about five opportunities to kill him.
Yeah, but this is, like, three times that he thought he should be dead. This with the shooting him 500 times. But the fact that Paul then has this rocket launcher...
No, it's a grenade launcher.
And...
It's a grenade.
Oh, is that what it is? Grenade
launcher? Because, I mean, I thought it was a rocket launcher, but normally you see the rocket come out. This was just basically blowing things up like left and right. Like he was at this point, he turns into John Wick and Rambo. Like he's a combination of John Wick and Rambo.
Did you guys notice Jesse when he drove away, when he left them, when his car blew up, when Tim Russ died, it was a really bad dummy. It was just a dummy. The car was barely moving and the rocket hits and it just exploded.
Was it Danny Trejo again? because they've used this dummy three other times.
I would have loved that. It's like a Hollywood dummy.
Well, at this point, I would assume it's deflated because it was deflating at the restaurant. So can you imagine, like, they just had, like...
Well, this is a question you would ask. Is the,
oh, yeah,
the dummy have a SAG card?
Considering the dummy's been in multiple scenes. Listen, I think that the autopilot in Airplane has a SAG card.
Flawless body double.
That is the most, that really is the most amazing. I mean, again, I mean, not to rehash talking about it. It is so bad, but the fact that it looks nothing like, you know, who he's opposed to. Like, the other guy looks like Jack Nicholson.
I would hope Danny Trejo wears it. I would hope he owns a shirt with that on it.
Can you send him that picture, like in his Instagram? Send him that picture.
Oh, sure. Danny, you're getting an Instagram. Danny, huge fan of the podcast. So then this scene, John P. Ryan, he takes the girl. He runs upstairs to the roller rink. So this is where we see henchmen we didn't know about. So I'm guessing these were John P. Ryan's henchmen that are just walking around an arcade with guns.
Yeah. And what if he never got up there? Because they were assuming they were going to kill him in the garage. So they were just waiting with guns up there?
Yeah.
And no one's saying a thing. That is true. Everybody, that was normal.
Like, that might be a regular thing. I don't know.
I do love when Paul walks up and he has that gun and he's clearly just walking past. Nobody knows what's going on. They didn't hear the explosion. There was no vibrations on the roller rink. Everybody's just still going around in circles. Paul's walking around. Nothing's
Don't forget there's a DJ there. So the music is probably pretty loud. So now it's like a Naked Gun kind of movie. Like, I would like to see the bad guy throw in some skates. And then Paul Kersey throws skates on and go after him.
That would have been fantastic. You know, a shootout around the roller rink. Oh, my God. That would have put the movie over the top.
So he kills the henchmen around the arcade games. It's nothing. He blows up the games. Nothing exciting. No, but,
okay, so do you think it's possible that any innocent bystanders were around that he killed also?
Yeah.
Okay.
There might have been some trampling.
Okay. Oh, he's up to about 25 now.
Yeah. So this is the one I wanted to talk about. So yeah, he does shoot the arcade games because they blow up. So sure, those bullets went through the back and maybe went through someone. But when he shoots the guy that comes out of nowhere and the guy falls into the fence, did you guys notice like two of the rollerbladers that were going pretty fast got whacked in the head by the fence when it flew? It was insane. It was like people were injured.
Well, you got to assume they're not stunt people. They were just like, they're probably just like really good at roller skating. So that definitely took them by surprise.
Hey, you guys want to be in a movie? We're not going to get hurt, right, mister? No, just sign this waiver. We are now gathered here today to remember the life of Rollerblader 1 and Roller Skater 2. But man, it looked like they got decapitated. That was like, fuck. And now.
Yeah, that looked like it hurt. That was like a steel cage match. Oh.
The showdown that the 80s wanted. John P. Ryan versus Charles Bronson.
And he has Karen at this point, right?
He has Karen and number two. Zacharias is number two. Yeah, he's using her as a human shield. And then Zacharias is number two is lurking around.
But don't you think that she had a few opportunities that she could have like escaped from him? Because he really didn't have that much of a hold on her. And he wasn't really focused on her. Like, I think if like she tried to run away, I don't think he'd go after her because he's so worried about Kersey. Like, I kind of blame her. Like she could have ran away.
Wow. Victim blaming.
I'm not victim blaming. I'm just saying she didn't make much of an effort because maybe, you know, something bad might not have happened to her later on.
I'm not sure why he ungagged her either. Like, why did he remove the gag from her mouth? Like, is that so she can breathe easier when she's running away? Like, I didn't. That it seems like a weird move. Like, I would think you would want to keep her gagged the whole time.
Did we see her? them remove the gag, or it was probably
they just fell like off continue. As they were running away. They fell down.
I thought he removed it in like the closet.
Oh yeah.
When he went to retrieve her.
That was so weird. Cause they go, where's Karen? And they go, oh, she's in the bathroom.
She's in the powder room. You're like,
but she's just in this storage closet.
All right, Jamie, hold on. Erica in that bottom right picture. She's definitely on coke. She might have had a prop, like a year long problem. You don't think
it was like a one time thing. Okay, so
that was her first time with JoJo. I think she's been on it for a okay. while.
You still feel bad that she died?
Yeah, but I mean, she definitely looks a little suspect.
Well, she was dating that guy, and the guy knew JoJo pretty well. And I feel like they were only selling.
And you had to assume that she knew that he sold drugs and bought drugs. So yeah. So she knew what she was getting into, is what you're saying. Okay. Yeah. All right.
We can blame again. Here we go.
So then they're at this other, the roller rink gets all dark. There's just like the disco ball going. And then Paul sees in the reflection, number two behind him. Boom, makes quick work of him. And the ending scene of this movie is this.
No,
it's wild.
I
see a movie end like
this. I'll tell you right now, I did not expect it at all. I mean, listen, the guy's had a lot of torment in his life. I did not expect that. So, I mean, now the cop's not there yet, right? Putin didn't show up yet. Okay.
No, he comes like right after that. So then they're outside. They all run outside. John P. Ryan has Karen. She finally fights back. She bites his hand. She starts running. He Uzis her.
Yeah.
In the back. And it's crazy because when he shoots her and you see like the whatever they use, it's only like a little bit. And then they cut to Paul. He's heartbroken. And then they show the body again. And it's all blood.
Hold on a second. Is he really heartbroken though? That's just... Well,
is he
heartbroken?
Is he?
So, yes.
But what he does next.
Wait, so the cop shows up now, right?
No, it's not yet.
Oh, he didn't kill. Okay, you're right. Okay.
No, the next scene is after she's dead on the ground, he looks over because he's been firing too many bullets. John P. Ryan, he's all out. And then freaking grenade launcher, and he explodes.
You know what? If he didn't shoot so many bullets for one guy in that car, he would be alive today.
Exactly. Well, I don't know if he'd be alive today because.
Well, he was pretty old back then. All right. But you know what? Think about that. So, like, just, you know, if any drug dealers are listening right now, you know, don't waste your bullets.
That is true. Never know. Save your bullets. No, now this is where Rainier shows up. And he's pointing a gun at Paul, and Paul doesn't get, we know he doesn't.
And again, another person that's giving Paul too much time. Like, I'm going to shoot. Yeah. I'm going to shoot. He says it like three times. You walk away. I'm going to shoot. And he just keeps walking.
He just keeps walking. I thought he was going to at least bow down, maybe do a little kiss on the cheek.
It almost looks like he's walking offset. he didn't want to do this movie again. You know, like again, he was upset about the third movie. He's upset about it. He goes, that's it. I had it. And he's not even remorsing with the girl dying. He didn't stop at her. He walked right past her and just kept walking.
Listen, he's been counting down the 4 million. You know, he has it down to like, you know, 12,000 per minute.
I'm willing to bet stairs was the end of the set and he walked right off. Like that's the last part.
And he just like
didn't check on that woman at all. Nothing. Like
he's like, yeah, I'm used to this by now. This is the third one I've lost.
I mean, if he kicked her on like the way out, I wouldn't even flinch. I mean, it would have just been like expected. But, like, like even if he like,
what if he like tripped on her?
Her out of the way so we can get up. Yeah. Or just like a little hop. Like,
I mean, the moral of the story is don't get close to Paul Kersey or you're going to die.
Yeah. And the music is way too upbeat too, right? It was kind of like, bam, bam,
bam. He's happy. It's finally over. He's like, all right, fine. He's happy. That's it. Happy ending.
I have to say I've been brainwashed by too many MCU movies that I was waiting for like end credit scene, like where he would go check on her. Yeah, bullshit. That's not happening at all. He doesn't fuck that.
So that was Death Wish 4, by far our longest review ever, because there's a lot to unpack. So before I ask our action movie sequel expert, I'll pose a different question, because obviously he's going to recommend it. But one thing I found, which is pretty wild, because after this, it was Death Wish, The Face of Death. But there was an unfilmed sixth movie, and this could have been pretty cool just by the name of it. Death Wish 6, The New Vigilante. So maybe he would have had somebody that he was training. That could have been pretty cool.
No, I'm thinking.
That's you, Doug. That's you.
He dies.
Doug, that's you.
And like his son is now the vigilante.
He has no family. They're all dead.
He gets a girl in every movie. So he gets married. Does he have a new girlfriend in the fifth one?
Yeah, it's Don Fontleroy's wife.
Does she die? All right.
She doesn't.
So
very rare.
Okay.
All right, Doug, you have a lot of connections in this industry. Let's get that made. I'll be the creepy dude. I'll be the creepy guy in the back of room with the video store.
Oh, I think you're going to be the guy that's pooping
let's
outside the girl's window so she doesn't call the cops. Oh, here's the paper. All right, so Andrew, this is what I'm going to pose to you, because obviously this movie rocks. We love it. 3 or 4? Which one's better?
So 3 is fun. 3 is, you know, you can drink, you can sit back, drink, tons of alcoholic beverages, and it's a great shoot 'em up movie. You don't have to think about it. You just enjoy the action, right? 4 is a thinking man's Death Wish. There's so many plot twists and stuff. It's great up until the end where he just doesn't give a shit about his love interest. So I'm going to say it depends on what you want to do. If you just want to watch a shoot 'em up movie, don't give a shit in the world, number 3. If you want something with a little spunk, with a little plot devices, I'm going to say 4.
All right. Jamie, question?
No, I can do the same. I'll answer both since, you know, I know our guest last week said that I don't like any movies. So I definitely recommend this. I mean, this is such an 80s, you know, over the top action movie. Watch it. As far as which Death Wish, I think 3 is a much better Death Wish. I think 4 is like a movie on its own. It's a separate, to me, it's a separate movie. It's not Death Wish. You know, he's hired to be a killer. Like it's a different kind of movie. So I think, you know, I think 3 is if you're looking for Death Wish and follow that formula, 3 is much better. But if you're looking for just ridiculous over the top action, and you got to go 4. So,
all right. And better line, chicken. I like chicken, or I'm making
a sandwich. I think it's the best line in all the movies. That's because so quick the way he answered it. And it just based on the scene it was just so ridiculous. It was the dumbest. It was the dumbest thing he possibly could have said in that moment, but it worked.
And just to like piggyback on both of you guys, I think both of you bring up great points. 3 is a straight action movie. It's the traditional Death Wish. Gets right into it. Like this movie takes, I think it's almost like minute 30 before we actually see Paul. He already kills Jojo. So maybe it's around 25 minutes until it gets into it. Then it picks up. But now they're both great movies. But before we introduce next week's movie. Thank you, Andrew. Now the body count in this movie was 61. I don't think that's right.
That's it. Yeah. But are they counting all the innocent people that died? So I think that's only the obvious ones that we saw, but it's not counting the store clerk. It's not counting the bartender.
And all the all the warehouse workers that now have coke addictions because of the secondhand contact with the airborne powder. How many lives have they destroyed?
How many lines did they destroy too? A little cocaine humor for all you cocaine fans out there. Thank you, Andrew, our action movie sequel expert. So next week, it's a busy week for us, just the timing of everything. And I was a poor planner. So it's Friday the freaking 13th. So Monday interview with a legendary casting director, Fern Champion. She cast her for 4, 5, and 6. We chose what I think, and Jamie agrees. The best one, there's a way to look at it. The best Friday the 13th is part 4. The most fun is 6.
6 or 7. Wait, which one is Jason Lives? Oh, okay. 6. Okay. Yeah. That's a fun one.
So that's how I look at both of them.
But four, to me, is by far, I think, the staple of all of them.
Exactly. And Chris Egan, who's our horror expert, is like the best horror movie we're going to give him. Usually he's doing The Fly 2 and, you know, Amityville 2 and all these bad horror movies. But this is a great one. And man, Fern Champion, her stories about casting, how she went from being a fashion designer to casting and how they kind of work hand in hand. She casted the Cheech and Chong movies, the first 5 Police Academy. So she has some stories about finding those people, Break-In and Break-In 2 Electric Boogaloo, and so many more. She has a great story about how she discovered Cameron Diaz for The Mask and a lot more. So that's a great chat. So don't forget to review, rate, share our podcast, follow us on all social media at Sequels Only, and don't forget to check out our website, sequelsonly.com. Good night.
Good night.